Blog Talk Radio.
There we go.
Some people try to pick up girls, get called an asshole. This never happened to Pablo Picasso. Why, he could walk down the street, girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. Not like you. A girl to turn the color of an avocado when he drive down the street in his Eldorado. Why, he was only 5'3". Girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. That's New York. Girls get called an asshole. This did not happen to Pablo Picasso. Why, he could walk down the street, girls could not resist his stare. Subsequently, Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. Nope. Not right here. Not like you.
The BBC would like to apologize for the following announcement.
Oh boy, technical problems.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
It's clobbering time.
Big G was sleeping on me. It took him a second. I needed more gunshots to wake him up, and now he's using atomic fire to attack us all, but we deserve it here on Clobberin' Time. I don't know why. We just do. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, everyone, to Clobberin' Time, issue number 494, something like that. Yes, we say issue because we're helpless comic book geeks, and that's just the way we roll. I believe it's 495, 492, 494, somewhere up in there, but we're getting close to the big 500, Yeah, can't wait for that. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Clobberin' Time on the Grenache Network. Shout out to Decker and the gang, Possum Hour here on the Grenache Network, Clobberin' Time, Mondays, 10 p.m. Eastern, and Fridays, 10 p.m. Eastern as well. Next week, I don't know what we're going to do next week. Anyway, but this Thursday, no show because we're going to go see the Guardians of the Galaxy. Why are we going to go see that? Because it's just what we do, and who isn't going Thursday night? I don't know. We'll find out. But I am very excited, everyone, to have tonight's guest. I have enjoyed his extraordinary blog, Super Team Family, The Lost Issues. And before that, Ross, before I introduce you, what was it called before that? It was Brave and Bold, The Lost Issues. Is that correct? Hello, Ross, you still with me? We have Ross Pearsall here, but Pearsall, are you there? But I'm having, how are you, how's it going, Rick? I'm not sure. I don't know if we lost Ross or not.
Hear you.
Let's see here.
I can hear you.
Yeah, you hear,
can you hear
me? There you go. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I've been
Ross
hearing you the whole time. Yeah, it did start as Brave and the Bold, The Lost Issues. And then I went to Marvel 2-in-1.
That's right. Well, I'm sorry about that. I had a bit of a technical glitch on this thing. It does happen with Blog Talk Radio. Sometimes we have a relatively primitive studio switchboard here, so I apologize for that.
No problem.
Ross Pearsall, Pearsall is how you would say it. Is that right again?
Pearsall.
Pearsall.
I pierce all my ears.
I got you there. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. Let me tell you something, Ross. I have gotten so many people hooked on going to that blog and looking at your covers. And I have a little a Facebook group called Clobbering Times Baxter Building Basement, and which is, of course, connected to my show here. And lots and lots of fellow longtime comic book geeks there. And, you've seen it in other places, too. I know your work gets passed all over the net, as I'm sure you're well aware. And if there is no easier way to get a bunch of geeks to go, oh, man, that is so cool, than to post one of your covers. By the way, I hope you don't mind when we do it, but sometimes we just can't help. We put one up there and say, check this out, and then you got to go see this blog. So I hope you don't mind.
I think it's cool. Most people are really cool about, providing a link so people know where they can go to find the whole collection. The only time it annoys me is a couple times people will take the cover I just did that day, 5 minutes later, put it up on their site with no mention of where they got it from or anything. You put the picture and it just goes to another tab with the picture on it. It's like, if you're going to take my picture 5 seconds after I put it up, just tell people where you got it from. But 99% of people are really cool about it, so I love it when people will put it on Pinterest or something. I think it's great.
Yeah, because, you see that, and I remember seeing it. Welcome, Flashback's in the chat room, good to see you, my brother Flash, and then Greatest American Hero Rick there, and I hope we'll get more people in the chat room. Matthew, wherever you are, my brother, call in whenever you're ready. My partner in crime, Matthew, is late. What's wrong with that boy? Anyway, anytime you see one, it's just incredible. And every one of my friends who's just a longtime comic book geek absolutely loves the blog and goes to it all the time.
Oh, that's great to hear. I love to hear something like that because, I don't have much of a barometer to go by other than, the folks who comment on my blog, and I don't get a ton of comments unless it's like a cover that has really struck a chord with people. So you don't know. You see your traffic that's onto your blog, but you don't know if those people enjoyed it or what they felt. So it's always nice to hear that people are digging it.
Yeah, they really are. And by the way, you got a mention in my favorite magazine. Right now, my favorite magazine, being a Bronze Age baby as I am, I love Alter Ego, I love the Jack Kirby Collector, but Back Issue right now is just my favorite. And I was elated to see that you got a little mention in that this previous issue, the Batman Partner issue.
Oh, I was thrilled to death with that. I like you. I love that magazine. It's right in my wheelhouse. The era of comics it covers are the exact comics I was reading growing up. So I've loved it. I've collected it since the first issue. And Michael Urie, who is the editor there, has always been a great supporter of my blog. He's commented a lot on my Facebook page, and he's done a lot of suggestions that have turned into covers, like Aquaman and the Sea Monkeys or Werewolf Jimmy Olsen and Werewolf by Night. He's always got some great suggestions. So I think he appreciated that I did a bunch of his suggestions, and he told me he would throw me a mention, and I thought it was just about the coolest thing ever.
It was cool, because, again, and I love Urie. He's great. I love his magazine, and I see him on his group all the time over there. And, it was funny. a few times in the past couple of years, I've looked on the blog to find a way to shoot you off an email or something. Say, hey man, I'd like to have you on the show, and I couldn't find one. But I guess other than seeing normal comments, like just send you an email, I didn't see one on there. But I probably that was a while back.
Yeah, if you click on the about me, pretty much the only thing there is my email address, and people can send me emails there.
Right, and you're also on Twitter now, but at the time, I guess when I was looking, for some reason, I didn't see it on there, and I know some blogs don't have emails, so I guess, and then just recently, because I'm always looking at the blog, you know, but just recently when I saw you, actually when I saw that article in that mag, and then the new issue, and then issue of back issue, I thought, oh, well, wait a minute, you didn't mention you had a, this is how dim I am when it comes to, you know, I'm old, and, you know, when it comes to the Internet, you think I know it, but now I'm all over Facebook. I did not know you had a Facebook page. Everyone, by the way, not only is it Super Team Family, everyone, the Lost Issues blog, you also have a Facebook page and Twitter. I said, wait, he has a Facebook page. Even I know how to use that. I'll message him on there and see if I can get him on the show. So that's kind of what gave me the idea.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
Not my finest hour of thinking there. Right, Flash? You can go ahead and mess with me about that one, Flash. I deserve it. Where'd Flash go? There he is. No, he's not. Flash disappeared, Rick. Get that boy back. And, again, we have a live chat room, but sometimes it's glitchy and somebody gets messed up. But then other times people will listen on the archives. This here on Blog Talk Radio, I noticed the show that you went on the other day was also Blog Talk Radio in origin. It streams live, and then it gets saved into an archive, so... And so for anyone who wants to go back and listen. Now,
yeah, I'll make sure and put up a link.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. First of all, again, it's the standard interviewer question, but I guess it kind of makes sense that it would be. What got you started on this idea a couple years back when you started with the Brave and the Bold covers?
Well, Brave and the Bold was hands down my favorite comic growing up. I loved any comic that was a team comic or a team-up comic. More characters, the better. And I loved Batman, so here's a Batman team up. Plus, it had Jim Aparo, my favorite all-time artist, doing the art. But I was just in love with that series. And even though I love Batman and the Outsiders, I have the original art of their first ever appearance. I was still bummed that the Brave and the Bold had to end, you know, to make way for Batman and the Outsiders at issue 200. And there were so many great Batman team ups. But I thought they never got to, you know. I wanted to see Batman and Martian Manhunter and, you know, Batman and Haunted Tank, you know, all kinds of stuff that they never got to. Batman and Shazam, Captain Marvel, I can't believe they never did that. I used to see Jim Aparo with Ross Shazam sometimes on our World's Finest wraparound cover, and I really wanted to see a whole issue of him. So I was just doodling one day and made a few covers of, okay, what if the series had continued? I was very strict. I tried to use only characters that were printed during the time that Brave and the Bold was on a stand, and tried to use Jim Aparo art if I could, and just use characters that weren't in the series. And that's where it started. I posted a bunch of them on a message board, and people liked them. So I posted a few more, and I kept posting away. And after a while, I started to branch out, adding the Marvel characters, and what if Batman could team up with anybody, and that went on from there. And when I decided to stretch out a little more, I changed it to Marvel 2-in-1, this time having the Thing as the anchor for the team-ups. And by the time I got into that, people were like, okay, you're going crazy with these, you're printing so much, why are you putting them on this message board for five people to see, why don't you start a blog? So I said, all right, I'll start one. And And the rest is history. You know, the blog went up. People got a kick out of it, so I wanted to figure out how I could keep it going after Marvel 2-in-1 and Batman. I went back to Brave and the Bold a little bit after I did 2-in-1, and that's when I decided to do Super Team Family because that you can team up anybody with anybody, and I felt like it opened the doors wide open. And got some Photoshop, decided I wanted the quality of the covers to be stepped up a notch, and I've been going ever since, and I love that the blog seems to have grown in popularity, so I'm going to try to keep plugging away at it.
Well, it's just amazing, and I love that you mentioned Aparo. That I of course, share your love for Jim Aparo's work and that Brave and the Bold series. I just got the second volume out of it. The reprints, you know, there are two of them now, the hardcovers that reprint those, all the Apparo Brave and Bolds.
Oh, and, those are nice. And hopefully they cleaned up some of the muddy coloring that obscured so much of his work. It's a crime when you see some of the original art and then what was on the printed page. So they had such muddy printing and coloring back then. You lost so much detail.
Well, they do. It does look very nice, and yes, I think it did. I think they did clean a lot of that up, and I love how you mentioned Batman the Outsiders. I was actually running a comic shop at that point, and I was really aggravated that after 200, it was going to be it for Brave and the Bold for the same reasons you were. I mean, I loved Aparo, so excuse me. I was going to get I was going to get any book that he was doing anyway, but I just loved Batman. Brave and the Bold, as it was called. Batman Brave and the Bold is the, of course, brilliant, wonderful cartoon of a similar name. I was pretty aggravated like that. You know, I was going, man, Batman with one group branching out from the Justice League, it seems such a waste for Earth-B, because everyone knows for the longest time that Bob Haney wrote those, it was all Earth-B. This Batman really didn't have a whole lot to do with the rest of the DC universe for the longest time series. Yeah, so I'm like, man, I don't even remember what the editorial reason was for that, other than they just wanted another team book. But other than Metamorpho, there was really nobody in that group that I even liked. Other than Black Lightning, I kind of liked him. So I'm like, wow, Batman with Metamorpho is pretty cool. Black Lightning's pretty cool, but who are these other clowns? What, you know, why? it was fun. And I am just one of the biggest Ben J. Grimm, the ever-loving blue-eyed thing fans you're ever going to meet. He's my all-time favorite character. And as much as I love that Brave and the Bold book, which I do, and, of course, loved your Brave and the Bold covers, when you did, when you started doing the Marvel 2-in-1s, that was like, oh, my man, I didn't think it was going to get any more fun than the ones you'd done on the Brave and Bold ones. And I'm looking at those, I'm going, oh, my God. Benji just teamed up with all these other crazy characters and stuff like that, some of these crazy team-ups. I'm looking at one now, for example, that was from the one you did. Okay, the issue number has changed up. The one you did with the Thing and Ace the Bat-Hound.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, that cover, I used for the Thing, where it was Thing and question mark, and it turned out to be the Sphinx.
It has the
silhouette of the Batman mask. You know, that's something that inspired this blog, because I remember seeing that cover, and I'm like, no, they would never do it. But it just got me imagining, oh, my God, a Batman and Thing comic, how cool would that be? That cover was such a tease. So I was glad I was actually able to use that and make it an actual Bat Shadow for that cover.
It's great. You do so the crazy ones will make you laugh. They're like three or four different types of covers, I think, on your blog. You tell me where I'm crazy. You got the absolutely absurd ones that are so crazy you just can't help but laugh. That team up ain't ever going to happen, and I love that cover because it's funny. Then you got some of them that go, even though they are Marvel DC crossover, whatever, you're going, you know what? That one I could actually see. That would be cool. And you love it either way. You love them with one that's just really out there, and you love it when you see one that's going, man, God, that's one I would really love to see. Do you get that reaction, those varied reactions maybe?
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad, because I do try to go for both things. Some covers I just want a quick laugh, and then some other covers I want people to think, oh, I would buy that, or that looks like a real cover. You know, especially sometimes I'll get lucky, and I'll be able to use the same artist for both characters on the cover, and some are a lot more seamless than others because of that. But, if I get the main reaction I want is somebody to say, oh, I would definitely pick that up if it was a real cover. That's exactly what I love to hear.
Yeah, because, by the way, you see one and you go, wow, I've never thought of that one. It's just hilarious to see it. And other ones you go, wow, I didn't think of that one, but, man, that one would work. That one would be a great story.
I like to, there are certain ones that I think people would expect to see, a Superman and Thor kind of thing, but then I like to put in a cover, like Rom and Starfire, but if I get a neat enough hook on the story, people are like, know I wanted this, but now that I see it, I would definitely check it out just to see what's going on that cover scene. So, yeah, I like to keep people guessing. And then sometimes I like to, when I think people are getting a little too comfortable, throw in something like, you know, Omaha the Cat Dancer and Bill the Cat, just to keep people on their toes, like saying, anything
yes.
could happen here. So.
Hilarious. I'm one of the other things I love about the blog, just the blog in general itself, by the way, is the fact that once you get, you know, if obviously once you know what the blog is about for someone who stumbles across it, I love this part down when you scroll down, other than the ones that list what you have by each month, and you can click on any name, any character you love. You could click on, for anyone who does not know the blog, by the way, you could go down there. And in alphabetical order, there's a list, and there's each character listed that it features on a cover, and a number by how many covers there are. And it's great because you can go, for example, if you want to see, I wonder if he ever did one with Black Lightning, for example. Boom, you go click on Black Lightning. There are 13 different covers with him teaming up with various characters, and I love that about it because you can just sit around going, you can think of a really obscure character. Go, let me see if this guy thought of so-and-so. I bet he never thought of so-and-so. Then you go, oh, my God, there he is. And you click on it. That's kind of a fun thing for me with the blog.
Yeah, I like the labels function. I used to just have a little search thing so people could search, but then I found out once I got into, you know, my third year on the thing, it was getting so unwieldy, I put in the labels, and, yeah, you can either search by character or by artist. If you're like, oh, I do like Jim Aparo, you can see all the covers that I use Jim Aparo art on. You can do it that way as well. But, yeah, I like it. It's you know, I do these all, you know, for so long that even sometimes I forget, and like, if I'm working on a new character, I'm like, what have I done already? There's been a few times I've clicked on it just to go through my old covers and try not to repeat myself.
Yeah, well, that's great. And that is a wonderful function of the blog that I have used many times. If I'm just sitting around going, you know, I just want to pull one out that maybe I have not seen, because, again, you have so many of these. I mean, it'd take you forever to go through
a lot of times I'll get suggestions of one that I'm like, yep, did that one 2.5 years ago.
Did that one.
Take the labels. So that happens the sweatiest time.
Yeah, exactly. Like I see one here, for example, Dave Cockrum, 10 times. You know, I love the late, great Dave Cockrum. So you go in there and go, well, there's – and again, if you know comics the way I know that you do and the way that I know I do and some other friends of mine, I was in the business for a long time, the retail, and just, you know, love – you know, we all kind of, in some small way, like to think of ourselves as at least amateur comic book historians to one degree or another. It's fun to look at some of these covers and go, I think I know what that originally is from, and it's not easy, but you can do it if you know that artist. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I like to use covers and art from all different eras, and, you know, if I can, evoke the style of cover of that particular era that I got it from.
I'm looking at if not my favorite of all of them, one of my top. I'm a huge, huge Legion of Superheroes fan and a huge Dave Cockrum fan, as I mentioned. And, I mean, not only did he do my favorite Bronze Age Legion, you know, right there in the Bronze Age, he left that to go do the X-Men. And I love the Super Team Family cover where you had Legion of Superheroes and the X-Men. And I love some of the little touches. You have a little touch there that sometimes I go back and didn't realize it. You change the issue number. You got 60 cents on there. You change the issue number to 550. And you, I mean, because these are all over the place. And in other words, you have does that mean that you are going in order, though? You have that many Super Team Family covers?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
The Brave and the Bold and the Thing issues were just random numbers. In fact, you know, people are like, why is it 17 different issues with the number 110 on Brave and the Bold? Because, believe me, when I started doing this blog, I had no idea that I was going to still be doing it this far down the line, especially those early Brave and the Bold. I never knew anybody besides three people were ever going to look at them. So by the time the Super Team Family rolled around, I'm like, okay, this is a real thing. So I decided to do it chronologically, and so yeah, those are all numbered in order. So yeah, I'm on issue 837 of that, but so that means there's been 837 Super King Family issues posted so far. And you know, I think you have Marvel 2-in-1 and Brave and the Bold together come out to about 508. So I'm in like the 1300s that have posted so far.
Wow, that's amazing! Like I say, that's the thing. If you get into this blog, anyone out there, I mean, you got plenty to keep you busy with it. Let's put it like that. There's so many different ones to go through. And of course, you come out with them pretty regularly. I know you do a good number of them a month. Do you keep any kind of schedule with it, or you just try to do as many as you can a month? Oh, a cover a day. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yep, every single day. I started for a while doing 5 days a week, but I was getting ahead of myself, so I decided to do it 7 days a week about 2 years ago and haven't missed a day yet, and until the foreseeable future, I'm going to keep it 7 days a week.
Wow, that's excellent. You know, I never noticed that. I just go look sometimes and see a bunch of them there. I didn't realize it was actually one a day. That's good to know. I mean, of course, because sometimes I didn't look for a while, then I go, oh, man, a bunch of new ones up there. I didn't realize they were going that fast. So that's always fun when you see a bunch of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to make the blog a daily stop, you know. So it's just some place you always stop in the morning or on your lunch break. You know you can stop at least once a day. There's always going to be something new for you. I know some people do say they're like, I read your blog in trade paperback form. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, oh, you know, once a month I go on, and it's like, I get 30 new pages. So I'm like, okay, that's another way to do it. But, you know, I try to do it every day for that purpose, to keep people coming back on a daily basis.
the old I'm waiting for the trade.
trade waiting, it even gets me.
Yeah. Yeah, did you read the news? No, I'm waiting for the trade. Oh, God, really? So now they're even doing that with blogs. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's great, though, and it's amazing. Now, I was like Flash said in the chat room, I'm the same way, Flash, I guess because we're old geezers. His favorite decade for comic was the 70s. I'm a Bronze Age baby myself. I love Golden Age and Silver Age covers as well, but there's something about the 70s cover, or the Bronze Age cover, particularly the 70s ones, that I guess because that was when I was a kid and first discovering comics, that I mean, I can't even a crappy one, when I look at one, you know, just it touches my heart in some way because I love that era so much.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I mean, and you have two guys who are at the top of their form. I think the best cover artists for DC, Nick Carty, hands down, and for Marvel was Gil Kane. And these guys both had a talent of kind of summing up, finding the most exciting part of the story and presenting it on the cover. And, you know, and this is back in the 70s, they weren't afraid to use word balloons or captions. You know, they weren't all poster books like we see now. And especially those two artists found a way to present a scene, and it was a scene that was inside the comic that you knew you were going to find in the story that just made you say, okay, I got to get that one. So that's the kind of feeling that I try to evoke with my covers as well.
Well, that's excellent. I was lucky enough to meet Gil Kane a couple of times. Never got a chance to meet Mr. Carter, but, you know, Gil Kane, I'm a Gil Kane freak, and I love his – well, I obviously love his interiors as well, but, man, you're so right. Gil Kane covers, especially of the 70s for some reason. I'm with you on his covers of the 70s. Carty, 60s and 70s is great covers. Obviously, it goes without saying Kirby's – you know, something about Kirby's Return to Marvel covers, which I really love. And those are the guys, I think, when it comes to the covers of that era that I love the most. There are probably a lot of other ones. But, yeah, I mean, Nick Carty, just again, we just lost him about a year ago, unfortunately. We're losing so many of those greats. He was just amazing with the covers.
And he could do any genre. I mean, his superhero covers were great. He did a great run on Justice League or these World's Finest 100-pager covers. But then he'd do, like, The Witching Hour and these great creepy covers that were great. And then you'd see, like, a true romance. He'd do a romance cover, and that one looked good, too. You know, he could do any genre, and I think they knew it. They made him, like, the house cover guy for a long time, and I could see why.
Yes, yes, him and of course, and then there are Adams covers. Of course, there were a lot of great Adams covers, and but yeah, Nick Carty, great one. And it's I never even looked up his name on there, but I'm sure you probably used a lot of Nick Carty's, or have you?
Oh yes, plenty. I love his covers, and anytime I get a chance to use one of his covers, I'll definitely jump at it.
Wow, 31 times. There you go. That's a lot. He was just extraordinary. One of the things I've noticed on the blog also is that you collect original art.
Oh yeah, and it's a great thing to be able to show it on the blog because I've never really shown my collection in person to anybody who really understood how cool it was. All my friends and family, you know, they like comics, and they know, oh, those are the guys from the movies, and they'll appreciate the artwork for the art that it is, and they recognize a few of the more famous characters, but I've never walked through my place with a big-time comic guy like me who'd go, oh, my God, that's from that issue, or, oh wow, that guy created the character to do that. So it was a great thing for me to be able to put my artwork up on the blog and kind of share it with people who really got it, how cool this stuff was in the same way that I did.
Yeah, well, I love seeing that original art and stuff. I unfortunately have never been able to afford getting into it myself because I know I would not be able to stop. The only pages I have, I have a Jack Kirby page that I was lucky enough to purchase from Jack and Roz themselves in 1986. And my two greatest times of my entire life, geek or otherwise, is the two times I met the Kirbys, and they were fantastic. And I have a Kurt Schaffenberger page, I believe, that I bought from Julia Schwartz. But other than that, I've never been able to really, because as you well know, it's not cheap to collect the original art. So, but it is fun to see it when you post it on there.
Oh yeah, well, and you know, I haven't bought a new piece in probably at least 6 years. You know, I got these all when I was living in New York, and yes, it got to be very expensive, and also I ran out of wall space, and I mean, where I live now, my collection barely fits. So yeah, I had to stop just because I was running out of wall space, but I'd like to pick it up again one of these days. But I wouldn't apologize if I was you. If you only have two pieces, Schaffenberger and Kirby are a good place to start.
I love them. I love them. And again, to me, that was just that experience, you know, meeting Jack and everything. It was incredible. My friend Rick in the chat room names one of the covers he loves, the Superman Iron Man cover that has Welcome to Metro sign on there, because he, of course, Rick, that lucky bastard, he gets to go to the Superman Celebration Metropolis every year, which I want to go to one of these days. So he singled that cover out, and I went to your blog, and that was the first one I was able to get to when I pulled up the Iron Man thing, and that is a great one.
Oh, that's a Nick Carty cover, at least the Superman part. And I think it might be Gil King. It's Iron Man with a nose, too. I like to get the Iron Man with a nose in there if I remember correctly.
Yes. I love that. I think you're right. Yeah, it's the Carty cover with the Iron Man. That is a Gil Kane Iron Man, isn't it? Nice.
I've done a few different Superman Iron Man covers, and I've always found a different twist. The first one, I had Iron Man in his gray costume, but the chest is glowing green, and he's iron metallo. And then I did one that was kind of Christopher Reeve and Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man, and I made that Iron Man and Superman the movie. So I like to revisit team-ups that I've done before, especially if, like that, I can do a new spin on them.
Yeah. I see you have a couple of Iron Man James Bond ones with Sean Connery. Those are cool.
Oh, yeah. I've got another... I did a team called the Bondsmen a while ago, and it was James Bond Strike Force, which you had Nick Fury, Batman, Doc Savage, and Indiana Jones. And they're one of my teams that will have a return visit on the blog. The Bondsmen will return.
Oh, nice. Dan Robertson of the Expert Comics website. Dan, oh, good to see you, my brother. Always appreciate you popping in there, man. Let's see here. Now, I was looking at – what was I trying to think? Again, what are the, do you ever, since you're doing one a day, it cannot be easy to come up with new ones, again, because you've done so many. Do you ever get stuck? I mean, is it tough to come up with one? You go, oh, man, I don't know what to do here. You just have to, I mean, how do you find, when that happens, what do you do, if it does?
Well, yeah, I've long ago learned to trust myself, because every time I, like, panic and say, oh, I'm never going to come up with an idea, then I'm like, relax, came up with so many before, something will come to you. So a lot of times I'll just fiddle around and to see what comes to me. It's very rare that I'll go in fully formed knowing, okay, I'm going to do Batman and Moon Knight team up, and they're going to be doing, you know, it's never like that. Sometimes I'll start with one character, I'll like a pose, and I'll fiddle around until I find a character that goes with it. Or sometimes I will have two characters, and I'll just be poring over my image library of each of them until I can find something that works. But it's a lot of scrolling around. There's a lot of websites I go to every day just to see if they have any new images. A lot of times something I see, you know, I'll go on you know, Best Art Ever on Comic Alliance or DeviantArt or the Dork Review. There's certain websites that are very image intensive, so I'll always check them out. And sometimes they'll have a great new nice clear picture of a cover or interior image that I don't have in my library, and as soon as I see that, I'll remember another character that might go with it, and then it'll start to go from there. A lot of times I'll be working on a cover for an hour and a half before it really starts to come together and I get an idea what I'm doing, and then I can continue it to the end. And then there's a lot of times when I'll completely finish the image part of a cover and I'll have to kind of figure out a story to go with it, you know. Usually I'll figure out the story along the way, but there have been times when I'll finish with a cover and it's got two characters squaring off, and I'll have to kind of figure out some motivation for them.
Well, to have done so many of them, you have a fertile imagination and stuff, because, I mean, it's easy just to take some images and put them on there, and especially two. It's pretty, I guess, for to go, wow, this is two no one would ever suspect and do. But then, like you say, you have to kind of come up with them, you know, because covers do kind of tell a story sometimes.
Repetitive if I've got a lot of pictures of people that are about to, like, I'm going to battle you, you know. I want to give some kind of flavor, some idea of what the story's about, so it's not just these two characters are fighting together, or these two characters are going to fight each other. I want it to be give the viewer a little bit more than that to go on. And so whenever I can throw the seed in of what the story might be about and spark somebody's imagination a little more than just, hey, it's these two guys together, then I'm going to try and do that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, just an example of some of the ones that are that's just a crazy one that just makes me laugh and hits home sometimes, because I'm such, again, as I mentioned, I'm such a huge fan of The Thing. I'm looking at one of the ones you did with Marvel 2 in one, where it was The Thing and Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, that is one of my favorites.
Well,
as well.
What's funny to me is the two statues on there, I have them both.
Really? Oh, that's
yes.
Great. You know, I love Wallace and Gromit, and I've been wanting to do a team up with The Thing, and I'm like, I'm going to make this work. And then I was like, well, because I'm like, they're in claymation, and I found some cartoons, and they didn't really look good, of Wallace and Gromit. And then I saw some Thing statues. I'm like, that's how you do that cover. So, yeah, I'm glad you like it. In fact, I had so much to choose from. That's why that cover is like a split story. There's two adventures in this, because I couldn't even decide which one I wanted to do, so I threw them both on the same cover. But that was actually my first photo cover, where I used photographs and instead of line art. And I've only done a few since then. I've got a couple more coming up that are actually photos of characters, and they're tough to do to get them to look seamless, but that was the first time I tried that.
Well, I love that one. That was that's hilarious. It's really cool, and again, that's one of those ones you just got, I mean, it's just pure joy to see that, because it's so funny. And then I see those statues, wait a minute, I have that Thing that's a bust of him with the stogie, and the other one is him that's with my other Fantastic Four, Mark Bowman, whatever figures, whatever they are. Randy Bowman. Randy Bowman, sorry. Randy Bowen statue.
That's really cool. Yeah, I used another theme statue for my first Christmas cover. I did a thing in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and I hit him.
Oh.
Took the Bumble's place and put the star on top of the tree, and I used a statue for that one as well.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that. I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, now I wish I had that statue. Oh, my God, I don't have that one. Wow. But is that a statue or an action figure? It's a statue, huh? Dang, that's a cool one.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. Looks like it, I think it is, too, also a statue there. Now, let's see. There was I don't know, what happened to Matthew Flash? Where's that boy? He said he wanted to get, he's a big, my friend Matthew used to sit in with me. He's a big fan of your blog as well. He had a question for you, but if he comes in later, we'll ask him. Now, let's see here. You said earlier that people are always trying to stump you. So in the sense that they're saying, hey, have you done this one? Has that happened much, though? I mean, early on, I'm sure it did, because you didn't have all the ones you have now, but fairly more recently, do people still, are they ever able to you know, to come across one and go, how about this one? And you go, that might be, I didn't do that one yet, that might work. I mean,
there's plenty on my list that I'd still like to get to, and a lot of times people will suggest characters that are just so obscure, and granted, I've done some pretty obscure characters on there, but a lot of times they'll ask for characters that appeared literally once, you know, and I'm like, I can only use what images are out there, and sometimes there's very, very little to work from. Or sometimes they just have a character that, geez, I thought I was well-read in comics. I've been reading them my whole life, but people still come up with people that I've never heard of or some obscure cartoon show that was either before or after my time. So, believe me, I get suggestions all the time that I haven't done yet. And a lot of times I jot them down, and maybe 6 months later, something will pop into my head and I get the perfect idea for that. And it's for a character that I never would have thought of using on my own. So I do get a lot of requests, and I feel bad because I don't respond to every single one. And the main reason for that is because the response is the same every time, which is maybe. You know, it's like, I'll do what I can. It all depends on the images that are out there that I can use. And sometimes I'll do it and you won't see it for several months because I work ahead of time. But so hopefully people don't get insulted that I don't say maybe individuals every time somebody suggests a team up. But I do appreciate all of them, and I do always jot them down for future reference.
Well, that's excellent though, and it's got to be so many people who see the blog and go, man, I wonder if he could do this one or that one. So everyone probably makes other people, and it's just human nature. It gives them ideas like, wow, I would like to see, seeing these goes, wow, I would like to see, you know, so and so. I'm sure it inspires that in people.
Yeah,
and
well, I guess this one guy, he's like, it's all, what have you done for me lately? Every single day he comes up with five or six new team-ups he wants me to do. He'll riff off, you know, whatever the team-up that I present of the day, and he'll take one of the characters and tell me 10 more people he wants to see with them, which is great, but he's relentless. He gives me so many ideas. And then every once in a while I will do one of his ideas and I post it, never get a comment about it. He never says anything about the current cover, just what he wants about my next one to be. And like, like, you son of a bitch, you're the one who requested that. How about a thank you? But no, he's ignoring that because he's got 20 more requests. He's like, he'll phrase it like, I'm still waiting for such and such. I'm like, I'm sorry, you know, like that I'm late with his request, you know, but... So.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Most people are tactful about it, though.
Yeah, well, that's good. Then hopefully most of them are at least polite and grateful when you do one. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's the thing I laugh about. I'm like, I finally did one. You suggested it. You don't even notice it.
Yeah, that's a shame, man. I'd be going, I mean, if you did one I suggest, I'd be going, wow, that is so cool. I'd be going nuts. I'd be posting it going, look, everyone. And I'd be going crazy over it myself. I'm just thankful. Rick points out what he loves, because my good buddy Rick in the chat room, Greatest American Hero Rick, the Burger Masters one. So I pulled that one up, and yes, I remember that one. That's hilarious, with Wimpy and Jughead and Superman and Hulk.
That's another one of my favorites. In fact, when I made some T-shirts for Comic-Con, I put that one on the T-shirts. once again, okay, that's a prime example of what I was talking about before. I didn't sit down and go, yeah, I'm going to make a team of superheroes who all eat lots of hamburgers, you know. That never entered my mind. But I'm looking through a bunch of pictures, and I was, I think, cracking up at that the picture of Superman eating a ton of hamburgers. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll make a Superman and Wimpy cover where they're both eating hamburgers. And then it kind of grew from there. And then I must have put in Wimpy hamburger, and then, like, suddenly Scooby-Doo with a hamburger came up in the image, and it grew from there. And so as I'm fiddling around, by the end of the day, I've got this insane cover in Burger Masters that I never would have, like, thought I would have done when I woke up that morning. But that's sometimes the covers are very organic in the way they come out. That was a very happy accident how that came together. And I even love my title on that one. I think I said, this beef, this bovine, you know, which comic readers will know what I'm referring to. So.
Yes. Well, I love
I'm glad
that.
You liked
I love
that.
And it's a great touch that you put the Hulk in there from the Bernie Wrightson graphic novel, The Big Change.
Oh, yeah.
It's great to have the Hulk sitting there for some reason. It's just perfect somehow.
Yeah, that's right. Something's the last page of that story.
And Greatest American Hero Rick, of course, that is his name. And so he just found the one you did with The Greatest American Hero, and he got a kick out of that one as well because he's, of course, a big fan of that show.
Oh, well, you can tell him. I think he's Greatest American Hero is, I think, showing up at least once more. I might have a couple more of him coming up. One of the cool things about that was that someone had posted that on Twitter, and I saw William Catt, like, gave it a thumbs up. So I'm like, wow, the actual Greatest American Hero saw my cover and liked
wow.
it. So I thought that was very cool.
That is very cool. I was trying to pull that one up again. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's not in. I can't find it in the G thingy. But but anyway,
under T characters with T.
T. Okay, no wonder.
Yeah, a lot of times people are like, "There's nobody for the thing," you know, like picking the first stuff.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, you have two of them. Okay, one with him and the thing and the Hulk. Oh, cool.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Forgot about that one. Yeah, and I think I got one with. Another one coming up, at least.
I love that one. I don't know if I remember seeing this one before, the woman Thing and Hulk. That's a great one, too. That's looks like the from like Jim Starlin version of Thing and Hulk.
Yeah. I think it was from an ad, too. I forgot who was actually popping out of the middle of that thing. I think it might have been a subscription ad or something like that. That does happen to me. I have a huge, like I say, I'm trolling for images all the time. So I've got a huge library of images. And a lot of times, by the time I do a cover and then post the cover, I mean, it's months and months after I originally got the image. And sometimes I forget where I got it from. You know, I'm usually pretty good about naming the artists and everything, but sometimes I'll spend, you know, 20 minutes after I put the post up on the blog searching for the image again just so I can attribute the artist.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know. Oh, there's Matt. Good. Yeah, but that's it's just so cool to see that, and it's fun. As I don't know what it is about old time comic book geeks like myself. I don't know you're one as well. Do you ever like? It just sounds silly, I guess. But sometimes you'll see something like that, or you'll see art, and you'll go, you'll know who drew it because comic book. That was like when comic book art actually had that kind of identity, when you could tell who drew what and different things like that. Whether you like the artist or not, you could tell who did it. And it's fun doing that on some of the covers, actually, to go, I think I know who drew that one. That, you know.
Well, you can always look in the label section under the cover, and that's where I list the artists.
Yeah. You know what? Oh, I know I won't ask if you did. You probably did. Like, again, you never really have to ask. You just look at it. You can pull it up there. But with the Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out this week, I'm sure you're going to be going. Have you done one yet with the old Guardians and the new Guardians?
I just made one the other day because I was noticing. I'm like, wow, I don't. I have a couple with the new Guardians, and I've got one with just Martin X and another hero. He's got a solo cover coming up. But I just did one the other day of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I hopefully that'll come out by the time the movie comes out on video. But, yeah, I noticed that was an oversight of mine, too, and I had a few good images. So, I actually, it was like this past week I sat down and I was like, you know what, I'm going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy cover and put it together. Oh, and it's with the Legion of Superheroes, so you should like it.
Yes, I do have that one. I would just pull. I just pulled that one up. I love the one.
This is going to be another one, but this is Legion and the classic Guardians.
Oh yeah, because I'm yeah exactly because I know that's a Perez Legion cover that you put the new Legion the new Guardians with.
Right.
Yes,
and I
would
in fact, I only had a couple of Guardians on there. I think it's just Rocket and Star-Lord.
Star-Lord.
So I didn't even
that's,
have the whole
yes.
team. So I've been meaning to go back. Yeah, especially because it's going to probably blow up. I'm hearing nothing but good things about this movie. So. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of new fans after this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I don't know about you, but I never really ever even read the new group much. I know very little about them, but I remember the old group, you know, very well. But I think, you know, for me, as a bit of a purist, someone who doesn't like what Hollywood does to superhero movies that often, when it's a group or it's a character I really don't, I never really, you know, knew much about or paid much attention to, that kind of helps me enjoy the movie sometimes. And that could be the case this time. Nothing against this group. I just never, you know, read very many of their, you know, or any maybe of their
comics. Yeah, I mostly know of the characters. And Star-Lord doesn't really seem like any Star-Lord I've read before. But I know Rocket Raccoon and I like Groot and Gamora. You know, I know them from their Marvel histories, but I haven't read a lot of like the Abnett and Lanning Marvel space books, which is where this team really came from. I've read a couple, and actually what I've read I've liked, but so probably I'm like you, I might enjoy this movie more than I normally would because the comic isn't quite as sacred to me. But I tell you, when it comes to these movies, and I've heard some of your views, I can see why you call it clobbering time. You don't hold anything back. And I slap an Elseworlds in my mind in front of a movie, you know, because it's never going to be exactly like the comic, you know. And it's great when it feels like it's a comic come to life, but I've learned by now there's always going to be some changes, and I find I can enjoy it a little more when I'm like, this is just the spin on the character. It's not going to be your character.
Yeah, I've gotten more of that way as time goes on. If I enjoy the movie, I still have to enjoy it as a movie. I do like it when it's closer, but we all know, as you said, this is never really going to be, and they're never going to do it close. So when they get closer, it's a nice bonus. But, yeah, most of the time they're not, and I talk about this a lot where I'm saying, you know, we were kind of born a little early in the sense that now the technology has caught up to where they could literally make these characters look like a comic book just bursting off the screen. They could make it really look so good now visually, and yet, for me, they're not going to make them look like exactly the 100% the way I want them. So if they get just kind of close, and remember that comic books are supposed to be fun and not get too brooding and serious and not really bastardize the character so much, I have been known to enjoy them as well. Because I realize they're not really aiming these things at me anymore, Ross. They don't, you know. If I enjoy one, it's probably just I've got to be thankful, I guess. When you know,
they're getting closer. You know, I mean, 10 years ago, everybody was wearing black leather suits. You know, and now we're getting close to actual superhero costumes. So it just kind of takes them a while to catch up. And like you said, the technology is finally there that hopefully they won't be afraid to do some of the more outlandish concepts. I mean, that's why I like Guardians of the Galaxy. Even if I'm not the hugest fan of that property, just the fact that they're doing stuff with the raccoon with machine gun and talking tree characters, just like the fact that they're taking that chance. And because there's so many more characters that are a little more out on that periphery that I would love to see translated to the screen. And if this does well, hopefully that'll encourage studios to take more chances.
Absolutely. And in this kind of grim and gritty type of a culture that we have right now, that if you're going to put a talking raccoon in there, you better back it up with a movie that will make, not me, because I like that kind of silly kind of stuff, but you better make it to where you can, the most cynical and the younger among us who like to see their, you know, their blood and guts and their super serious stuff, you better find some way to really make some appeal with it and make people go, you know what, that talking raccoon was fun, and it was badass, and it was pretty cool. You know, you're taking a big risk, and you have to admire them for that. They're going, look, we're putting a talking raccoon in a movie that we're spending this much money on, a group that nobody really knows who they are outside of hardcore comic book geeks. That's such a big risk that you almost have to admire it and go, yeah, I'm definitely going to go see that one and see what they do with it.
So, and it's been getting very good reviews, so maybe that risk will pay off.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. So, and it looks like a lot of fun. Except, of course, Flash and Matt. By the way, what I don't know what happened to Matt, because I know Matt had a question. We'll get him back in there. But Flash, I know you're going to see Guardians, even though you didn't go see some other movie yet, you lazy bastard. But I'll mess with you about that later, young man. Well, wait a minute. You're not young. Oh, your son is, though. And where is he? I don't know what happened to him. But anyway. By the way, our friend Rick, he just mentioned? Oh, yeah. Dan, our good buddy Dan, loved the Moon Knight Badger one. That's one that that got me, too, because, again, I know Mike Theron has just recently started doing a Badger a little bit more now, but for the longest time, Badger hadn't been around in a while. And as you know, what's great about that is they're both crazy. Unfortunately, Moon Knight's way too crazy now. So I love that one.
Yeah, I had just done a Nexus one, and so some of the commenters were talking about the first comic characters, and they said, oh, you should do another Badger one, and everybody wanted me to do Badger and Wolverine, and I knew this one was coming up, and I'm like, okay, Badger and Wolverine, and I actually am going to fiddle around and maybe try to do that one of these days, but I think if there's a Marvel character that the Badger goes with perfectly, it's got to be Moon Knight. I mean, they both have multiple personalities, so I thought that would make a great basis for a story.
Yeah, it is. It's a great idea. And again, it's just kind of fun to see Badger. And you did say you've done Nexus. That's another one that a lot of people don't remember those characters that much from the 80s, but I was working in comic shops at the time, and every time I see one of those 80s types characters, it's kind of fun to see that.
Yeah, you know, I was... The blog is very much a reflection of the characters that I liked, so the characters you see the most are generally the characters that I read growing up, and that's why it's the bulk of it is Marvel and DC, but there are so many fans of so many other characters from elsewhere, and I've gotten so many requests that I try to keep mixing it up and not make it Marvel and DC every single day, although there's always going to be a lot of that, obviously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I get a kick. Oh, yeah, the Nexus Space Ghost one. Yes, Dan. Love that one. That one. See, there's one of those ones that goes, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. You see that one and go, there's one that could work.
Well, visually, they just go together so well. I mean,
yes.
I think Nexus was designed with Space Ghost kind of as an inspiration in mind, and you can definitely see it in the design.
Yes, and Steve Rood, of course, later did a Nexus. I mean, did a Space Ghost comic as well. Love the work of Steve Rood. Amazing.
Beautiful.
Great artist. Yeah. Do you have any – are there any art – because, again, you've done so many covers now, it's kind of – sometimes you go, you know, some of the questions you just aren't – you already know the answer to that you've done most of these. But are there any artists of your favorite artists that you haven't used as much as you would like to? On some of these covers, didn't turn out that way?
Some of the more painterly artists, it's very hard to mix their stuff together than it is with line art. People ask me why I haven't done more image characters, and a lot of times it's because, like, for instance, Spawn, I've only done one Spawn cover, but it's McFarlane's art is so stylized. It's very hard to mix it with another artist and not make it stand out. I've used McFarlane a couple times, and in fact, on that Spawn cover, it was Spawn and Venom, so it was McFarlane and McFarlane. But he's an example of an artist that I find is tough to use. It's just because he's got such a signature style that it really sticks out if you try to blend it with any other artist. But a lot of times. If I think the concept is strong enough and I like the story, even if the art doesn't blend together perfectly, I'll still put the characters together. But just with McFarlane, I found that he really sticks out.
Yeah, he does. So I understand that. Like I said, I was looking at one. Sometimes I will go in there and just pull an artist up because, again, I love that. And I pull up Kurt Swan because I'm a big Kurt Swan fan. And I see you've used him about like 9 times or so. And I see some of those covers. I'm like, wow, it just, I don't know.
I think my favorite time I used him was when I did Superman Family and Gladiator from Marvel. Because the Gladiator from Marvel, I pulled from his Marvel Universe entry, and I think it's the only time Kurt Swan did work for Marvel. So it works perfectly putting that Swan Gladiator in with a Superman Family cover, and it looks like really does look like a lost issue that might have come out back when we were growing up.
Yeah, it looks perfect because, again, I just was – just as you said that, I was looking at some Swan covers, and I passed that one, and I was like, you know – that was so cool that you used the only time he ever drew just about anything for Marvel. Certainly the only time he ever drew, you know, and it's just so weird that it was Guardian that he drew. Everyone always kind of thought Guardian was kind of a Superman-ish, you know,
well,
knockoff anyway.
Well, he was the Superboy analog when they did Dave Cockrum created all those heroes. So that was
exactly.
The Imperial Guard was the Legion of Superheroes, so he was the Superboy analog of that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, and I love that, and I loved it when you did. When you did the Dave Cockrum Bronze Age Legion and the early X Men, I love that one because a lot of people. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's just an example of a cover when I had the artist doing all the characters, and I like how it came out. I thought it came out pretty seamless.
Yeah, and it's great, and a lot of people don't even remember or know that, you know, later it was done, there was, you know, the X-Men Teen Titans crossover was originally intended to be X-Men, you know, was X-Men and the Legion, and that
really?
Got changed.
Was it? I never heard that either.
Oh, yeah. They talked of it for years, yeah, and, Jim Shooter was going to write it, and then it just didn't turn out that way.
That would have been, talk about a lost.
Yeah, Yeah, that would have been fantastic. So that's one of the reasons why I love that cover so much. And then, of course, at the time, of course, who didn't love New Teen Titans at that point? And they just became hot, you know. At the time, Legion was really getting a lot better and doing really well. Paul Levitz and Giffen and those guys were doing a good job with it. But Titans was just so huge, it just kind of made more sense for it to be X-Men Titans. You could understand why it was X-Men Titans, but as a Legion fan, I was always kind of like, damn, I'd like to have seen that.
Yeah,
so that would have been cool.
I wonder if that's how they had Darkseid as the villain, because he was just had finished up a huge Legion storyline. He wasn't really a Teen Titans villain at that point. So I wonder if he was going to be the villain in the original one, and they kept him. That's pretty interesting.
He was, actually. Yes, he was, actually. That is, because, again, it comes so out of left field, Darkseid being in that.
Right, yeah. That makes it make a little more sense.
Now, my friend Matthew was here with us, and I think he had a question. Matt, you there, brother?
Yes. Sorry, sorry I'm late. I was predisposed, and so I apologize for being late.
I shall have to predispose of you later. No, man. Well, I'm always happy to have you, my friend. You were on with the great Ross Pearsall. Pearsall. Sorry, bro. This is my good friend Matthew, and he is, of course, a big fan of your blog as well. Matt. Did you have a question for Ross?
Not so much a question. I just wanted to tell him he's done such a great job with this thing. I wouldn't have found it if it wasn't for Mike, and he showed me a Booster Gold one. I think it was the one with Booster Gold and somebody else, because he knows I'm a huge Booster Gold fan. And I think you've just done a great job with this blog. It's just so much fun to seeing all this stuff. And actually, I just recently found the one with Breaking Bad and Batman, so you are my eternal hero for putting those two together.
Walter White,
Yeah.
I was so into that show, I had to do a Batman team-up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, Booster Gold is a fun character to use because of the time travel aspect. He can pretty much put him with anyone, and there's a reason for him to be there. So I got some more boosters coming up. I think the next one will be a Booster and Beetle together, and they're battling a big, bad Marvel guy.
Did you ever do Booster Gold and Dazzler?
There'll be more Booster coming on the blog. Yeah, mainly for that reason. I love that he can he's the continuity cop, and that's perfect for a blog like mine.
Yeah.
One thing, though, Ross, don't ever do Booster Gold and Dazzler because Matthew's heart could not take it. I knew you were about to ask him that, Matt, so I had to.
I was.
You know, I actually was listening to your podcast last week, and I heard you bring that up, and I said, hey, that actually has some possibilities. Booster Gold and Dazzler.
Joe, it's a combination
much,
because
so
they're both sort of these media mogul type characters, and they sort of would fit in an odd sort of dysfunctional family way.
Yeah. I used Dazzler on an early Brave and the Bold cover with Batman, and I kind of used that angle. He was at a Dazzler concert, you know, giving her flowers, little coffee,
right.
Bang. So, but those are the kind of connections that you like, because you at first blush you see who's your Golden Dazzler. But then you talk, they're both kind of into that media limelight side of the superhero biz, and it's like, oh, you know, that does make sense, and there is a story there. So I like to find those kind of little connections whenever I can.
Yeah.
Sometimes if they're not there, I just create them myself and say, oh, by the way, these are long-lost twin brothers or sisters. I've done that a few times.
Well, you know what, Ross? It kind of goes again back to what I was saying to you at the beginning of the show. You got the ones that go, that's just so out there. I just love it. It's just funny, you know. And then there are ones that go, you know what? That one, even though they're from different comic book companies, obviously, that one works so well. And the booster, like you both just said, the Booster Dazzler, that's one that makes you go, that's not much of, that's no stretch at all, really. It kind of works really well. Not a stretch at all.
And those are always my kind of favorite team-ups growing up. Like we talked about that, the original Super Team Family comic that they took the title from, you would see, you know, Batman and Superman, you know, team-ups you'd expect, and then you'd see Wildcat and Creeper, you know, something like out of left field like that. You know, and the Flash and the New Gods, you know, they would do these really wacky ones, and those a lot of times turned out to be my favorites. You know, I remember everybody used to love that, you know, and this was before the days where Marvel characters were crossing into everybody else's titles. They did this Marvel Treasury edition, and they had it was all reprint stories as usual with Fantastic Four or something, but then they had this brand new backup, and it was a George Perez illustrated Wolverine and Hercules tale. And I remember, and it was so tough to get because it was only in this Treasury edition. And I'd always heard about it, and it was just like Wolverine and Hercules. Now we've seen them together a million times. But back in the day, I remember seeking that Treasury edition out for years just so I could read a 6 or 7 page tale in it. But just because, like, I would have never seen these two characters together. So that's the kind of feeling I try to evoke with my blog, characters who you never thought you'd see together. But once you do, you really want to know what happens next.
Yes, you know what's funny about that is when I bought that it first came out, that was Perez and Villamonte inks, I believe. It was weird because it was in the back of a reprint book. Like all of Marvel's treasuries at that point were all reprints. One of my prize collections, Ross, is my treasury editions and tabloid editions. And so that was, you know, again, like you say, at that time, there was something more special about those, the weird or the eclectic team ups.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the late 80s, you know, I think Crisis on Infinite Earth kicked it off. There's been so many line-wide crossovers where it's like, we all have to get together and battle, you know. So now you kind of have, at least within comic companies, seen every character with every other character. So I think I love those big, huge crossovers where everybody meets everybody, but it's been done to death so much now. I think some of the freshness has been taken away for seeing two characters together for the first time, at least within the same company.
Yeah, well, it's great. By the way, I'm enjoying the Dick Tracy and Rorschach one. For some reason, I missed that one. I just came across that one. And I love it because I'm a big, big Watchmen fanatic. And I don't know if I'd seen this one or not before. That's a really good. I don't know what's Rorschach. Is that a Gibbons Rorschach, though? Or it looks like it's from something else, maybe.
Tracy and Rorschach, I'd have to I actually just did a Rorschach cover today. I did Rorschach and the Punisher, which I couldn't believe I had never done that before. That is a Dave Gibbons. It's a painted version he did for, I don't know, it was for a trading card set or something. But yeah, he had them. I think I used a Dr. Manhattan from that same set on another cover.
Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. That's from the portfolio. I remember now. I have that.
Right.
It looks like it's from the cover of either one of the portfolios or one of the French editions of the Watchmen. I should know. I have the Ultimate Watchmen collection from back then of everything that came out with it. I should have spotted that age.
So I just did a Rorschach one today. Who punishes the Punisher? So you'll be seeing that some months down the line. And actually, Dick Tracy, he's one of those characters that I use a lot, and I'm like, I don't get a lot of requests. I just really like him. So I'm like, I hope people don't mind that I throw a Dick Tracy cover in here every couple months, just because I personally like him. And for some reason, I just like seeing him up against different characters, especially putting him with different characters from the Batman world. I think since he also battles all these grotesque villains, I always feel like they could be kind of operating in the same city.
Well, yes, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I love Dick Tracy. I got a buddy of mine who's just a huge, huge Dick Tracy fan, so more than a couple of times when I came across one of your Tracy covers, I would show him, and he would just get the biggest kick out of that. But never stop with those. They're a lot of fun. Love those. Now, since my buddy Matthew is such a fan of Booster Gold, that's his favorite character, I'm going to pull up the Booster Gold ones now. So you're going to be using them again soon, you said, right? You've got seven of them here. That's not bad.
Yeah, probably in a month or so he's coming up when the next booster comes.
Yeah. You got seven of them. That's pretty good.
Yeah, like I said, I like him because, most of my Booster Gold covers make some kind of reference to his time travel. I thought that was kind of the best rejuvenations of a character that I've seen in a while was when Dan Jurgens went back and brought the new series back, right before the new 52. I loved his kind of, everybody still thought he was a goofball, but he actually was tasked with this very important mission of protecting the continuity and going through DC's timeline. I thought it was a great example of how you can polish off a character that maybe has seen better days or isn't lighting the world on fire and give it a new spin and make him seem completely fresh again. So that's inspired me to kind of use him a lot on these covers.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you have a friend for life if you ever do Booster Gold beating the crap out of Guy Gardner. Just saying. I had to say it to him. I had to tell him. Booster Gold beating Guy Gardner. But again, that wouldn't be nice. I don't know.
Well, they're both DC, though. That's the only thing.
What's that? Oh, yeah, that's true. They're both DC.
They're both from DC, so that probably wouldn't fit with my blog.
There you go. Sorry, Matt. You could have
no.
to... Yeah.
I tried.
Well, actually, my favorite Booster cover is one in which he's not really on it. He just makes a cameo. I did a cover, and this was a reader suggestion I never would have thought on my own, but someone put it in the comments, and I had to do it. I did a Quantum Leap and Sliders cover.
That was awesome.
And
I'm looking at it.
Sam Beckett's trying to look for a Booster in that one, so he was a cameo.
That was brilliant, by the way. That's brilliant.
It kind of refers back to a previous Booster cover that I did with Kang, where they were searching for Sam Beckett and a bunch of other time travelers. So,
right.
There's no continuity on Super Team Family.
No, we don't need that. Who needs continuity? It just gets in the way anyway. I mean, as much as I despise all the modern stuff that Marvel and DC does, Ross, since I'm an old timer and realize they're not aiming them at me, if they would just come out and say, look, I'm giving you guys one title, and it could be just an anthology series that takes place where you could have, a different creative time. Like they do with Batman. Remember they used to do with Batman Legends of the Dark Knight? It was a series called Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, and they would have a different creative team for a one or two or three or four issue story, and it didn't have to take place at any particular time in Batman's history. Remember that?
Yeah.
I would love one of those for DC.
They did Legends of the DCU, which was that theme.
Yes.
I mean, it only ran for a couple of years, but, it was the same idea. They bounced around the timeline, and they used a different creative team, and there was some good stuff in there, if I remember correctly.
I would love to see someone do something like that again. It'll never happen, but that would be fun. By the way, I'm looking at your Jurassic 4 cover. that was, I don't know if you've seen that with Matthew, but Devil Dinosaur, Rex, Mechagodzilla, and
Gone.
I don't know Gon. Do I know Gon? Who is
this? He's
who's
this little, you know, he's another guy. He came out, geez, that had to be, I think, in the 90s, mid-90s probably. And it was, I forget the artist's name. I'm sure it's on my cover there, an Asian artist. And it was mostly wordless stories of this little tiny dinosaur, but he could kick any other dinosaur's ass. You know, he was regularly beating up T-Rexes and Triceratops and stuff. It was mostly just beautifully illustrated, and it's one of those characters that's always stuck in the back of my mind, and I'm like, I gotta use Gon. And once again, that was a cover that was gonna be a Gon, and Devil Dinosaur came up, and it evolved
nice.
From there. By the time I was done with the cover, I had another team, and then I came up with that Jurassic 4, and I'm like, that's too good a name not to use, so I gotta find two more dinosaurs.
So I love stuff like that, though. It's so much fun seeing stuff like that. Have you ever come up with an idea or a character or some kind of mashup or team-up thingy where you went, you know what? I mean, in other words, you're going, no one will know who this is, so I'm not going to use them. Has it ever happened? Because you used some pretty obscure ones. So I just wondered, have there ever been some that you just kind of didn't use?
Oh, it's happened plenty of times where I said, oh, nobody's going to recognize this, but I'm putting it up anyways. I never did that second part. But I was like, well, I like it. Screw them. But that's one of the cool things about this blog. Even when I put a character up that I think is, like, really obscure and only I like, I'll get comments, oh, my God, I thought I was the only one who liked Wild Dog or, you know, something like that. So you find out that, hey, you're not the only person who's into this guy, and there's other people out there. And so it's one of the things that I like to do in my blog is to feature those characters so people will know that, you know, hey, you're not the only person who's a fan of this obscure C-lister from 1975. There's other people out there, too. And so I like when I can do that, give somebody a blast from the past.
I'll tell you one that floored me that we talk about it because of the obscure ones are really kind of fun to come up with or to talk about. One that really got me, Ross, was the use of David Dunn from Unbreakable. The Alex Ross one. I love that movie. And that, man, used Alex Ross on both figures, it looks like, him and Batman.
Yeah, and, like I said, Alex Ross is tough. You pretty much have to use another Alex Ross image. That's about the only David Dunn image I could find. You know, I think there were some Unbreakable comics. I didn't really like the likenesses. And that, once again, I think was from a little trading card thing that came with, the DVD set. And they had a picture of him and I think a headshot of Mr. Glass. So I pretty much had one picture I could use. So it was about, fortunately, I was teaming with Batman, and there's plenty of material. So it was about finding the right Batman to go with it.
You know, I always assigned that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've always assigned the David Dunn character a superhero name. I always call him Security Man.
Yeah, well, hopefully he should have got one in the sequel that never came, but
yeah.
We'll see that.
Yeah. Yes, he should have got one, too. Damn it.
Mr. Glass even has a cool-sounding villain name, so, you know.
Oh, man, I love that. I love that film. Boy, M. Night has not ingratiated himself with the movie critic elite of late, but that was, love that one for sure.
I think that's the one movie that could get me to go see M. Night Shyamalan in the theater again. And since he did Unbreakable 2, I said, all right, I'll forgive you the last seven movies. Go see it.
Me too. I'm with you, brother. I would definitely go after those. Because I guess he just got sidetracked. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if he
I heard Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis both express interest in him, and I think it's the bean counters. I think they just don't want to pony up the dough.
Yeah, and it wouldn't really be, other than paying those two dudes, a huge budget or anything, really. You wouldn't
Robin Wright.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's kind of got himself managed. I guess he's still doing some stuff, but, you know, but still got himself a little messed up there, huh? So,
but yeah, I like to team up Batman with some of these other characters from the movies and stuff. You know, I still haven't done a Batman and Darkman one. That's what I've been trying to do. I did Darkman and the Huntress, but I'd like to get in with Batman.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know off the top of your head, other than obviously Batman and the Thing, because you did those for a long time, is there a character you think, not so much used too much, but you've used more than others, that you held off for a while and go back to them later? Does that ever happen?
Oh, yeah. I try to not go back to a character for at least a month if I use them.
Yeah.
I don't always do it. There are certain characters like Superman and Batman and Spider-Man that are just so ubiquitous, and there's just so much material to choose from that I do go back to a lot. But I try to, when I'm doing my covers, I look, and if I've done a cover that features a character that I just had 10 covers ago, I'll shuffle around the order, so it keeps it interesting and people aren't seeing the same faces pop up all the time. You know, I was worried when I did the Batman and Thing that was going to be an issue for people, that one character was unchanging. So now that you've got rotating cast characters on both sides, it's less of a concern, but I still don't want to repeat myself too much. So I try to keep it mixed up by not having somebody appear twice in a month.
Ah, well, that's excellent. That's excellent. And I love, like, I know you, I was looking at the ones you mentioned earlier, the Bondsman, that has, you have Doc Savage in there. I'm a big Doc Savage fan. So you've done about 6 of them with him. I would like to see more, just because it's fun seeing those. There are a bazillion James Bond covers you could use, too. So it's kind of fun seeing those. And I noticed you use the James, a lot of these are James, well, there's actually a Boris cover, but that's Boris doing Bama, sort of.
Yeah, Boris.
The James Bama covers. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely more James, Doc Savage coming up. I think I've got five or so more covers, Doc Savage and Human Torch, some other characters, and of course with the Bondsman. I like using them too, and also because of those covers, they're so beautiful. Whenever I can do a Joe Jusco or Earl Norum or one of those painterly guys, I love to use those guys, those artists, whenever I can. And Joe Jusco has commented on the blog 4 or 5 times. He actually
really
gets a kick out of it when I use his artwork, you know. Yeah, so I've never heard from an artist who's like, how dare you use my art in this way? mostly when I've heard of them. I'm sure John Byrne doesn't like it, but he doesn't like anything. But other than that,
No. Most
everybody's been pretty cool about it. When I have heard from an actual creator whose art I've used, they've always thought it was pretty cool.
In fact, no protest, no complaint so far. Okay,
none so far.
Not even.
Yeah,
Byrne,
Eric Larson asked me to use Savage Dragon, so I did. I've done
Great.
A couple Savage Dragon covers, and Ron Mars tweets a lot of my covers, and he asked me to use Shinku, his character, so I did a Shinku Vampirella character cover for him. So yeah, it's cool. It's hard to say no when an actual creator wants you to use their character.
Yeah, well, you know, that's cool. I'm glad they like it, because I think, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, like us, even though they, of course, work in the business, a lot of them still love comics, and I guess they get a kick out of the very concept of just having these, you know, off-the-wall team-ups. Appeals to them on some level as comics fans, and they probably see your blog and see the pictures and go, oh man, you used my art, cool. I mean, I like that they have that response to it.
Oh yeah, I've found it one of the most gratifying things about doing this is when I hear from an industry professional and they say something positive about the blog, or they'll retweet a cover, and it's nice. These guys have given me so much pleasure over the years, reading their stories and looking at their artwork and reading about the characters that they created. I mean, this blog is my love letter to all of that stuff that I like so much, and I'm trying to present it in maybe a slightly new way so other people will get to share how cool I think all these characters are. So whenever I can hear from one of these creators and have a feeling that in some small way I gave them a smile that day, or you know, I did something that they said, oh, that's kind of cool, that I can, you know, give back in some minuscule way to the people who brought me such joy over the years. I mean, it's really a great feeling for me.
Well, that's great. I mean, I can't blame you there at all. I love that. That it's so cool that most people, and Byrne, you know, who knows, but even Byrne might like it, just he's such a grouch he'll never admit it, though. You never know.
I saw a thread where they posted it, and he's got a big thing about it. The artwork is sacred, and nobody should ever change
it. Oh, my God.
People were like, don't you see it? This guy loves artwork. You know, he's not doing this because he hates comics. It's clearly somebody who likes it. But, you know, he's got his feelings. But most people have been really, really very supportive. And, you know, I've heard from comments from guys like Jeff Smith and Paul Chadwick and Matt Haley, and they've been really, really supportive. And a small, quick sentence from them is so encouraging for a guy like me, you know. So it's been great to hear the response. And, you know, and every once in a while, somebody like Neil Gaiman or something will respond to a tweet or something, and my traffic will go through the roof that day. So that's also a nice little side when I hear from somebody interesting.
Yeah, I think I saw it. Am I wrong? Maybe I'm thinking of someone else, but I think hasn't Gaiman actually retweeted a picture of yours once?
I think it was, I think it was The Thing and Death.
Oh, okay.
Their Last Supper, and I think somebody tweeted to him, and he said, "Oh, where is this from?" And somebody told him about my blog, and so he put that on his Twitter feed. And that was one of the first times that I got the giant spike. I'm like, "Where is this coming from?" It was before I was even doing Twitter or anything. And finally, I figured out I can see all the traffic coming from this one tweet. I'm like, "Oh, Neil Gaiman." So yeah, but the idea that Neil Gaiman's eyes rested on something that I did is crazy to me, you know, after reading so many of his stories over the years, and that he obviously liked it enough to put it in the tweet. It's great, you know, that if I can give back in one tiny way, that makes me feel really good.
Proof positive that all of us, professional or fan, except for one guy named Byrne, has a little comic book, an old school comic book fan in us that just loves that whole idea with what you do because it's so amazing, and I think that is great. Flash, by the way, in the chat room, he mentioned one. I don't know. He said he's still waiting for Rocket Raccoon and Rocky the Flying Squirrel. There's a good one.
That's not the first time I've actually heard that, and it's only because of the disparate art styles. But like, maybe I could find like a Scotty Young Rocket Raccoon or something, and make it work, because I don't do like that idea.
I never thought about that though. How you kind of have to match up the art styles a little bit for it to work. I never thought really that, you know. Again, that's another one of the reasons why it's so cool to talk to you. I didn't realize that was. A lot of people just think, he just throws one together for another, but sometimes you really like to get those styles as compatible as you can.
Yeah, I mean, I got a suggestion the other week that I think is a cool suggestion, but I don't know how I would do it. They wanted to do The Walking Dead and The Warriors, like, from the movie. I'm like, well, there's Walking Dead comics, and even those are hard to use because most of them are black and white, you know. I try to look for a color.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then, but Warriors, I'm like, weren't they in a comic? You know, so I don't know how I would do something like that. So it's not enough to have a good idea. You have to have the proper material to work from.
I mean, unless there's some box art or some, something like that, or movie poster art. I don't think the Warriors, love the movie, by the way. I love that movie, but I don't think they ever had a comic, if I'm not mistaken.
It's
tricky. I guess it's possible.
So you got to find art wherever you can. That's why I'd like to, sometimes if I get something like that, I'll go to DeviantArt or somewhere where people will post their own artwork, and I've used images from there from time to time. But I tell you, one of the hardest parts for me a lot of times is the background. You know, it's one thing getting the figures, and a lot of times I can't use the backgrounds that are in their pictures, so I'll have to come up with a background on my own. So I'm always looking for landscapes or city streets or, you know, nighttime skies, and especially stuff that isn't cluttered, that doesn't already have figures in it. And it's very hard to get images like that. A lot of times I like the websites that figure feature backgrounds from animated shows, like their cells and stuff. They'll show the background matte painting. You know, I love that kind of stuff because I can pull it right off, and I have a bunch of interiors and exteriors saved, and just in case I have two people battling, so they're not standing against a white page. You know, I'll have a cityscape or something behind them. But that, I'm always on the lookout for things like that in the background, and that's probably the part of the blog that people don't think about so much, and they shouldn't. They should just appreciate the covers as a whole, but that to me is the trickiest part, is finding all the extra stuff that makes the cover work.
Well, that's the kind of stuff, like you just said, I've never really thought about that kind of thing, and it's fascinating to hear about it, though, because people, I think, look, probably people do probably take it for granted a little bit and probably just look at it and go, oh, he just used, again, because I'm a computer dummy, I don't know what you use for that kind of stuff, but I mean, you know, some people might just go, well, you know, anyone who thinks it's easy to do these things, you know, they don't realize, A, you know, what you were talking about matching the art up and all this other kind of stuff. Plus, one of the keys that you and I touched on earlier, you have to come up with some sort of blurb to make it feel like the old-style comics and to kind of give the idea. In effect, you are writing a miniature story when you do these. So it's certainly not as easy as people would think.
Well, you know, and it's not hard to do one of these. It's hard to do 2,000 of them, though.
Yeah, that's
the difference.
So many.
You know, it's I'm certainly not the first person who's done a mashup cover, but I think to do what I'm doing and try to present them on a daily basis and keep them fresh, that's where it gets a little more tricky for me, is to always keep changing it up, and so I'm not kind of repeating the same kind of visuals over and over.
Yeah, well, and you do an extraordinary job at that. I'm looking at, and you mentioned Earl Norum earlier, because, again, I love to have fun with some of these covers, like where they come from. You got the one, The Amazing Spider-Man and the $6 Million Man, which I just love that. I recognize the Spidey image from the old Spidey magazine, and Norum $6 Million Man, is this cover from one of the Gulki comics or one of the magazines of $6 Million Man?
I think it's one of the magazines. You know, I found it on a Google search just for Earl Norum, so I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but he did most of those kind of big paintings for the magazine back then, so it must have been something like that. But that was another thing where I knew I had some Norum Spider-Man images, and I looked and I'm like, oh wow, these two go together. But like, okay, so that's a cover where, see, a lot of people think it's just color forms. I had a $6 Million Man cover and I had a Spider-Man cover, and so you take Spider-Man off one and you slap him on the other. Well, that's good, but I had to erase the guy that was originally being thrown by $6 Million Man first. You know,
yeah,
there was another guy, and then once you take him out, you've got to kind of recreate the background using the Photoshop and do all that stuff, and then you stick Spider-Man on the top. That's the easiest part at the end, putting Spider-Man. It's making room for Spider-Man, which is the hard part, and that's the part that people don't really see on the finished cover, but that's what takes the bulk of the time to create it.
Well, I love that one. Excuse me. And it dovetails into a question about that. Matthew mentioned earlier that you did the Breaking Bad. You've done the $6 Million Man one. You've had, I know you've had some covers, 24. I'm a fan of the show 24.
I've got another one coming up real soon for 24.
Oh, really? Some more Jack Bauer. There you go. I'm wondering, that's just do you ever want to do more? Obviously, again, you talked about how it's tough to find the images. Are there more, TV characters or movie characters you would like to do, and it's just not as easy? Have you thought about doing more?
It is true, and it is like that. You know, I have a ton of great TV characters that I like to use, but it's just tough finding images. Fortunately, more and more, there are comic adaptations of TV shows, a lot more than there were, say, 20 years ago. So that's getting a little better. And artists are, you know, getting great at doing the likenesses, and the celebrities are allowing their likenesses to be used. You know, if I do a TV character, I like people to be able to kind of recognize it. But there's some fun ones coming up. I mean, I've got a Get Smart cover coming up, and that's
oh,
I never thought
nice.
I would do, but I found one that I thought worked. And like I said, I've got some of the these photo covers coming up. So if you ever wanted to see, say, Lou Ferrigno and Adam West in an adventure together, you know, I've got something like that coming up too. So you know, that's definitely something I'd like to do more of. But I think you will be starting to see more of. I'm getting a little more comfortable at using photographic images more than line art. So hopefully, I'll have even more of those type of covers in the coming months.
Well, I love that. I love the idea that you do use sort of the TV character stuff. Like, I mean, one of them just kind of makes sense here is the Spectre and Dexter, for example. That just kind of fits somehow.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of it is like whatever I happen to be watching at the time, I get obsessed with it, and I'm like, I got to do a Dexter cover because I've been watching it, you know, for this past month. And, you know, I was the same way when I was going through Battlestar Galactica. Suddenly I had a bunch of Battlestar Galactica covers just because I was so immersed in it. So it's, you know, a lot of time it's whatever I'm personally into at the moment, and that'll make it onto the blog.
Well,
like I said, I do a lot of requests, and then I do some covers that are completely nobody ever asked for. It's just something that I wanted to do. Like I did a cover with Chip, and it was like yeah, Dupe and Nibbler was on one side, and then you had Chip and I forget somebody else. But you know, it's this crazy cover that nobody would have asked on their own. But, it was Chip and Squirrel Girl. But I wanted to see it, so sometimes I'll be a little self-indulgent and put a cover out there that nobody ever asked for, but it was just something that personally I would see.
But they're still cool, so, I mean, because, again, you know, you came up with so many, like I'm looking at one now that has some burn art on it, but I'm not telling. But that kind of dovetails into that. I'm looking at Captain America and Wildcat. I love this one because I love Cap, obviously. You know, he's one of my all-time favorites. But I love seeing Wildcat on there, and that it's just something about seeing some of the characters like that from the JSA, then later stuff. You know, with Cap, I don't know, you know, some of the ones that are. That you kind of least expect, but then you go, yeah, Captain Wildcat, that one definitely could happen. Of course, you have them fighting, of course, because let's face it.
Well, he's training them. He's getting them back in shape.
Oh, he's training them. That's right. Okay, well, there you go. But I still love it. Isn't there a part of us as kids that love to see superheroes fight, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's part of the thing. It's like always the matchup. Who would win in this battle? So, you know, the blog hopefully gives people plenty of those ideas to think about.
Well, you're not a lifelong, you know, you didn't start reading comics as a kid. If you've never had the so and so is stronger than so and so argument. You know.
Oh yeah, and and I think it's you know the answer is who wins the battle, whoever's comic gets in. You know, but
there you go.
That's how it usually was. But, I like big superhero battles. In fact, when I would write and draw my own comics, it was pretty much my stories would always be an excuse to just have every character going up against each other because that's what I like to draw. So I would have a huge Marvel and DC kind of brouhaha, and I put all my imaginary matchups in there. I mean, it was all these thoughts were rattling around in my head years before I decided to do the blog. So it's these stories are finally finding a way to out of my fevered imagination and onto the internet.
Well, I love that, and again, it was like it reminds me of that was perfectly lampooned in Scott McCloud's classic Destroy. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, not that one. And I love Scott McCloud, but I don't know Destroy.
Well, he did a book called Destroy that was bigger even than your normal Treasury edition. It's gigantic. And it's just, like, to put it in his own words, two big muscle-bound moron superheroes beating the crap out of each other for 30-something pages. And
well,
with a hilarious punchline.
Well, I tell you, and, Scott McCloud, he was one of the first people to tweet about me because I did a Batman Scott McCloud cover, actually. It was right
yes.
after I'd read Understanding Comics. And so I actually hit Batman team up with Scott McCloud himself, and somebody had sent it to him, and I think he got a kick out of it, so he retweeted it. That was one of my first early big bumps, Batman and Scott McCloud. And I've used Zot and a couple of his other characters in later covers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's right. No, I used to love Zot. Well, if you ever see upon Scott McCloud's Destroy, it's called Destroy, the loudest comic in the universe or whatever, I cherish it, and it's just one of the fun. And it's just one big dumb superhero battle with a punchline. It was hilarious. I recommend that if you like McCloud's work.
Oh yeah, I should check it out. I love Understanding
yeah.
Comics.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I noticed. You know, it's funny. I noticed you used the Rocketeer a good bit, which I got a kick out of.
Yeah, he's another character I like. In fact, he's another one I just did a new cover from. I love his helmet. I think he's got one of the coolest looks in comics. And, I mean, Dave Stevens was an amazing artist. So I loved his comics early on, and I was bummed after Dave Stevens died that I didn't think we were going to see a lot more. And in the past few years, they brought him back, and but the roster of artists and talent they've got to work on it has been great. So I'm really glad to see that his creation is living beyond him.
Well, and again, he passed way too soon. Loved Stevens' work. I love the Rocketeer. My buddy Flash in the chat room mentioned us mentioning the $6 million Man comic and stuff made him start thinking a little bit. I don't know if that was a Carlton book or not. Flash, but it did raise the question. He said he hasn't thought about Charlton comics in a while. Have you used many Charlton? Some people, I guess, you say Charlton. Charlton characters at all, or not so
Phantom,
much?
Phantom, pretty much from the old. But are you talking about the Charlton characters that DC bought, or?
Well, not necessarily them, but not
yeah,
necessarily
like the
them.
Probably the Phantom, you know, like because that was where I first. Saw Jim Aparo's artwork with some of his old
yes.
Phantom covers. So, I've used the Phantom a lot, and I'll use some more. That's probably the only one, unless you're talking about the Charlton DC characters, which I've used, you know, Captain Atom and Blue Beetle and all those guys plenty of times.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering about that. Now, Matthew, you still there, brother?
Yes.
Matt, you still... Were there any covers because I know, again, you're a Booster Gold fan. You're a Dazzler
yeah.
fan, so you could never go
yeah.
wrong with Dazzler for Matt, by the way. Were there any other characters that you could think of that you have not seen on there that you'd love to see? I mean, because I know you like some obscure ones, too.
Yeah. No, I think, as far as I know, because when I was coming on here, I went and binged through the blog to see some of the stuff, and I don't remember if there was like a Phantom Stranger thing or not, but that was one that I always liked a lot.
Oh,
Phantom
yeah. I've had some Phantom Strangers. I did a Phantom Stranger on the Death Star one that I really liked.
Oh, wow.
And,
oh, yeah.
I've teamed them up with the Watcher and I actually did Phantom Stranger and the Phantom. I think that one appeared recently. But I love him, especially because, you know, he was another one of those characters that had Jim Aparo artwork back in the day. So, I mean, I'm a big Phantom Stranger from way back when. In fact, you know what? It's funny. I mentioned today when we were talking about Rorschach that I just today did a Rorschach and Punisher cover. And that cover actually... Mm-hmm. started out as a Punisher and Phantom Stranger cover. And I was doing it, and I was about 20 minutes into it, and I wasn't psyched about how the characters were matching up, and looking through my images, and I saw a Rorschach that I thought would go better, and then a thought up a much better storyline. So I took Brandon to change her out, put Rorschach in, and then came up with the whole who punishes the Punisher angle and did the cover that way. But that's an example of a cover that, you know, I started out with one idea, and by the time I was done with it, it was a completely different idea. But now I'm still... That Phantom Stranger on my mind because I never wound up using him today, so I'm going to try and look for another place to use him because it has been a while since I put him on our cover. But you can expect a few more coming up.
Nice.
I love Phantom Stranger.
Nice. Yep. Oh yeah. Yep. And I'm going to throw a bone out the Flash. By the way, Matt, you're going to have to smack him upside the head when he turns into a smartass on this one. But I'm loving the Adam Microdont's cover. And our good old buddy Flash likes to make fun of shrinking characters, but we, Matthew and I, love the Atom and Ant-Man, don't we? We defend him to the death.
We do. With no.
Oh yeah, I have another cover with Atom and Ant-Man together coming up, and I think Ant-Man and Doll-Man, I think is coming up, and and yeah, I get a bunch of ones. I love Atom, and I like using him in his Sword of the Atom phase, too. I think I got him teaming up with Tarzan as Sword of the Atom. And, especially
nice.
Ray Palmer. I think he's a great character.
Me, too. Love Ray. And, again, it was just kind of – it was cool to see the Microdots. That was a wonder.
Yeah, I mean, I used to have those toys. So, you know, it's a blast from my past. And, definitely got a few Micronauts covers coming up. You can expect to see them with Justice League and a few other different characters. So if you like Micronauts, there'll be more to come.
Well, that's pretty damn cool. I also love that you use Rom. We're going all over the place here now.
He's another great, quirky character. And I think it's crazy. He seems to be – I don't know what's wrong with Mattel, why they don't allow them to still use him as a character. Is it just – sitting collecting dust on a shelf somewhere? They seem to be crazy about their rights. Marvel's not allowed to reprint any of his stuff. It's like, well, why not? It's not being used by anybody else. But I love Rom, and I tell you, whenever I do a Rom cover, I hear from a bunch of people. He's got a huge following out there. So, I mean, whoever they should, somebody should put a Rom comic out. I bet it would sell.
Well, it should. Again, Hasbro owns it, and it's just a shame. They wouldn't allow anything, really. For example, they use some characters that were from the Rom comic, but they can't use Rom right now. But that's got to change soon. They just allow, because I'm a big Rom fan, I admit it. I always wanted that toy. Never got it, but wanted it. But they allowed some dumb toy company, I forgot who it is, to do a... what is it? This one of those dumb, what are those weirdly shaped, mighty, what are they called? Mighty Mites? I don't know what they're called. One of these weird-looking little toys that are kind of real round-shaped-looking things. Not bobbleheads.
Mighty Mugs,
something.
I think.
Right, Mighty Mugs. And they're doing a ROM of that. And I see that the people on the ROM group are going nuts over it. I'm like, wait a minute. I want a ROM figure. I don't want a ROM baby.
And like a ROM figure that looks like the ROM from the comics, because I remember actually seeing the ROM toy. I'm like, that's ROM. You know, it looks so crappy compared to the way they would draw it. So imagine if, you know, you had one of these great toy companies today that make these awesome action figures that do a real ROM. I think people would love that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Guy made a really great custom one that I've seen. But, yeah, I would love that one. Because, again, that toy, by the way, it's very expensive. I remember when I bought the first issue of ROM off the spinner rack, and I got to, you get to the last page or the back or whatever, going, oh, there's a toy? Wow, I love this comic. I want that toy. Then at that time, even for back then, I think it was expensive and couldn't get it or whatever. You know, and now it's way up there. But, yeah, it doesn't look all that – it doesn't look as cool as the Sal Buscema ROM.
My only thing about ROM was, and I say this with peace and love, I love ROM, but he had mittens. There's no other way to say it. Yeah, they were super gold space alloy, but it still was mittens, you know? Looked like mittens to me, because he just had the thumb and the hand. And I'm like, he's the only superhero with mittens. I don't know. I always thought that was kind of goofy.
We got a buddy of ours on our group, a couple of us. He knows what we're ROM fans, and he hates ROM. In fact, he picks on you for Dazzler as well, I believe. I think it's Abby.
Does
Matt,
he really?
He picks on you for think no, no, maybe he likes Dazzler. He picks on us for Rom. He picks on Charlie and I.
Abby's not a fan of Rom?
Yeah, he hates Rom. Abby hates Rom, and he just loves it when we – yeah. But, see, he's not alone. There was always this kind of weird – you were dumb if you read Ron back then. In other words, it got made fun of in the Comics Journal, which is a magazine I love. Yeah. Of course, it was a snooty magazine. You know, Ron, you read that? What are you, five? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I loved it. So he's always teasing us about that. So
Charlie's a big Ron fan. I know that.
Yes, me and Charlie are. Yeah. Charlie and I love our Ron there. But anyway, it's, again, Ross, are there – You say you get a lot of requests, but do you really get inundated with them though, and on a regular basis now?
Requests every single day. You know, I always get a few in the comments, and like I said, there's always that one guy who's like, "What have you done for me lately?" and rattles off 10 new ones on a daily basis. But I do get a steady stream, and I'm happy to say I've gotten to a lot of them. But I'm always looking for new ideas, so I love hearing and just gives me an idea of the characters that people want to see more of. So,
well, that just means it's popular. They really love what you do, and like I say, it's incredible how anyone, again, professional or fan, sees that and goes, "Man, this, I don't know what you call it." Like for example, I was looking for a way when I was writing the introduction, like. I guess I kind of called them, in a way, wish fulfillment covers. I don't know what else you would call them. I mean, how do you describe someone when someone says, what's on that blog? What are they? If they can't see them, what do you call it? How do you define it?
I try to put in my tagline, and they're the greatest team-ups that never happened but should have, All the team-ups that we thought would have been good but never happened, here's what they might have looked like. And that's basically what it's about, just to spark the imagination, remind people of why these comics and creators and artists are so great, and just present a little what-if scenario.
Yeah, it does. And it's just, again, it's just so much fun to see. There's nobody who's read comics for any length of time, especially us old-timers, really. I guess it doesn't have to be because Matthew's a youngster. You're so young, Matt.
Hey Matt, did you like the vibe Dazzler cover?
I love that because I love the fact that Dazzler. What does she say? Something like, "That's what you
she
think,
says,
but disco is still
will
alive.
Never die. Yeah. He's saying breakdancing here to stay." They're both wrong. That's what I love about the covers. They're both fighting for their dance.
Yeah. No, that was awesome. I love that. And actually, you know what, Mike, I need to tell you something really quickly. Flash just told me that as soon as he made a joke about the Atom in the chat room, his entire thing just crashed. So it's all karma now. It's...
Good. You leave the Atom alone, pal. That'll teach you to make the Atom went into his computer and messed, gave it a virus.
Ray Palmer was in there, and he's like,
Or a Hank Pym or Scott Lang.
They were all in there.
It's like, in the Aquaman superhero song on the wonderful Batman Brave and the Bold, there's a line in that, Ross, where Aquaman does sing. He says, "Shrieking's a power, but it's kind of sad." I'm like, wait a minute. Shrieking? I want to defend shrieking here.
I tell you, I love using Atom just because it gives a different perspective on the normal cover.
Yeah.
So it's fun to put him in there. I've got some fun ones coming up. I've got one with him and Mr. Fantastic working in the lab together that I really like. I think my favorite Atom one that I've done, there's been a couple. I like the one with the Punisher where Punisher is about to explode Atom on a grenade. But my favorite Atom one is the Atom and Machine Man where he's actually inside Machine Man's head, chopping away with his knife. It's called Hacking In. And it's because it's both of the Sword of the Atom and that Machine Man miniseries both came out around the same time in the early 80s, so it was fun to kind of combine those two into one cover.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Absolutely. Yes, it's a cool power.
And that's another cover. There's like a part of that cover that was so tough for me that people probably never realize it. That Machine Man image was only used, I couldn't get a clean image of it. It wasn't actually one of the four covers. It was used as a promotional ad for the miniseries. And finally, I found a good, clean image of it, but it was somebody, it must have been a poster. So it was folded in four halves, so I had like a big kind of a cross of a crease going through the middle of it. But it was the only version of this picture I could find, and it was perfect for this cover I wanted to make with the Atom standing on top of his exposed head. So I had to go in there with my Photoshop and clean out the seams going across the middle and up and down on that cover. Oh, it took me forever, but it's something you don't even notice about the cover, but you would have definitely noticed it if I hadn't done it. And I tell you, once again, the part that took the longest on the cover is something that you don't really see at all in the final project.
Yeah, well, it's... Oh, man. That was... I just found one... By the way, I got distracted for a second because my computer... I thought I lost you all for a second, but no, I didn't. Okay, so I'm back. I didn't. I had a sound drop out, but I heard you. We're still going. Let's see. Where was... I'm sorry, everyone. I just kind of lost for a second, but I came back. Sorry, everyone. I'm out there looking on the archive, and I'm sorry about that, Ross. But I did hear you, and you were recorded. It was me. It was my stupid. I think it was my stupid computer. And I wasn't even making fun of the Atom. What happened?
Actually, you know what? Flash just sent me a request. He wants to see the Atom on the shoe on Sergeant Rock's shoe, squashed on Sergeant Rock's shoe. That's what he wants.
Yeah, well, they're both DC. I do have him almost getting squashed by, I think, Ultron in an upcoming cover. So
that'll work.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that works. By the way, Ross, I think Neil Gaiman would love to see the one you did with Thanos and Death.
Oh, yeah. I like the tagline on that. He's like, he's like, this place always reminds me of you because they're in a funeral, and I call it Endless Love, you know.
Oh, that's a great one, though. That's a very clever one, and that's one that I think if Gaiman hasn't seen that one, he'd love that one. You know, one of the things that I get a kick out of, Ross, is the ones you do with the Star Trek covers. You did Star Trek Space 1999, I believe.
Oh yeah, and,
which is weird. Yeah, you know, there was a time. When, of course, Space 1999 was, I guess, the attempt was to try to make it, you know, the heir apparent to Star Trek. And, of course, didn't happen, you know. But it was kind of fun to see. And again, yeah, that's a weird one. You go, wow, Space 1999, who has ever heard of that unless they're old like me?
That's my thing. I put that out there. I'm like, is anyone even going to remember Space 1999? I barely remember it, you know. And but lo and behold, that's the kind of cover that I will really get a positive response from because nobody expected to see it.
Yeah, and you even got one with them in Space Ghost.
I think my favorite Star Trek one I've done so far is where they met Duck Dodgers because I used an image from the Star Trek animated cartoon back in the day, and that worked well with Daffy.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, I've got a lot more Star Trek and Star Wars covers coming up.
I'm a fan of both, so that's very cool. You got, in fact, you just did one of the recent ones. You just did Star Trek Planet of the Apes, or Captain Kirk Planet of the Apes. That's pretty cool.
Well, that one I moved up in rotation. I actually wasn't getting any scheduled to be posted for another couple of months, but then one of the big Comic-Con announcements was the Star Trek Planet of the Apes comic, and I'm like, like I copied it if I wait a few months. So I moved it up in rotation and said, hey, I actually thought of this idea. So it's actually going to be cool to see that come to fruition. I had another one a few months back where I did Scooby-Doo and Man-Bat, you know, crazy team-up. And then lo and behold, now they have the Scooby-Doo team-up book, and somebody sent me a few pages. Look, he's battling Man-Bat. It's like a page from the inside of your comic. So I'm like, wow, it's crazy. So once in a blue moon, an idea I have on the blog makes its way into reality. So I always think that's really cool.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, you got to love that. That's like you said, IDW and Boom are doing the crossover now. That's a See, that's one of those nutty crossovers. It's that if you see it on one of the on the blog like this, you laugh, but you don't you kind of don't expect anyone to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't have expected it.
That's what's so cool about it. I mean, that's what appeals to me about it.
Well, and this happened. This is all, the only thing I could think that was more far-fetched was the one they did a couple of years ago, the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes one, which I bought and read because, you know, I love both. That's just the stream running out, by the way. That's not the recording. But I don't know if you saw that one. Are you familiar with the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes that came out a couple of years ago?
I haven't got a chance to read it yet, but it looks really cool. I love the covers for it, especially the Phil Jimenez covers.
Yeah, those are nice, and Mike Grell even did some of them. It's just a... But that is, it's. Remember back in the 90s, they did those dopey, it was Star Trek X-Men team-ups, remember those?
Right, right. And Hank McCoy and Bones McCoy, you know, I like those kind of. But, yeah, I actually did a Professor X and Jean-Luc Picard cover using Patrick Stewart images for both characters and established.
Oh, yeah.
Related.
Nice. Yeah, again, that's the kind of thing, though, that Star Trek Legion one, as a hardcore Legion fan and a hardcore, original series fan, I got, I was sitting there going, this is so, I was the first one going, this is so dumb, but they're doing it, so I know I'm going to buy it. I had to buy it. And it was kind of goofy, but, I think it was goofy, but then a friend of mine, we were going, well, you know what, the only thing is they should have used more Legionnaires, but it was kind of, there's some kind of weird fun about it, though. And I'll get the next one, by the way.
Yeah, they've got coming up on TV a Family Guy Simpsons crossover.
Really?
It's like both
weird.
Those series I'm kind of tired of. It's been a while since I've seen a great episode of either. But I can't wait to see them as a crossover episode. I'm definitely going to be setting my TiVo for that one.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy. Again, sometimes a team-up, you just can't resist it. Like, I love the one you did, Cat Precinct.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you liked it. In fact, I was a little disappointed. I was hoping it would be a bigger hit because I love that cover. What can I say? I'm a cat guy. I think it cracks me up because for the longest time, ever since I had done that Ace and the Dogs of War cover, everybody's like, you got to do a cat team now. You did a dog team, now do a cat. And I'm like, okay, how can I do a cat? I couldn't crack it, the idea. And there were some cat characters, and then I stumbled onto this concept of, like, what would a cat team really be like? They, cats have their own personal agendas, and I can't see them being proactive there. So, I'm thrilled with the way that one came out. And but like I said, I didn't get a lot of comments, and all the comments were like, well, why didn't you put Felix, naming a cat that isn't on the cover and asking why it's not there? And I'm like, did anyone like the cover? But you can never tell, Every time I put one up, this one's going to be huge, and it's met with a whimper. And then I put one up that I didn't think was any big deal, and it's like the next morning it's been tweeted around the internet. One of my most popular covers, this early Brave and the Bold one, Batman and the Fonz. Oh my God, I think it stinks. It's old MS Paint one, and the font is all off, and the bubble was. It's just a very basic, simple cover. I stuck Batman, Fonz's head in the foreground. Said Batman, get out of town, Fonz rally. But this thing got a life of its own. I mean, and I would always cringe. I'm like, oh, that's the cover that's getting all the traffic. It's so poorly done, but you can never tell what's going to strike a chord with people.
Yeah, again, and I think that kind of shows. It's like, it looks funny. I mean, it looks cool, but the thing is, that just appeals to some people on just some level. Again, going back to what I said a few times, like some of the ones. It doesn't matter how ludicrous a Batman Fonzie team is. People, it just spoke to people, and they just thought it was hilarious, and they just loved it.
Yeah, and then there's certain touchstones of pop culture that people respond to. People love it whenever I use Mr. T. I'm telling you, I always get a big response, and so I'm bringing it back. I got a couple more Mr. T covers, so because You know, people just seem to get a kick out of seeing Mr. T team up with someone. So.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you've even used the A team.
I don't think so. I think I've used Mr. T from the A team, but I don't think
done
the whole A team.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
when he battled the Fenders, that was an image from the 18 number one cover.
Oh, okay. Wow, I noticed you had the Back to the Future one. Was there a Back to the Future one? Yeah, that's right, with the thing. That was
thing
one of the ones
the
I really
thing
liked.
Goes
yes.
Back to the Future.
Right.
Yeah, that was a simple cover, but I think the concept sells that one.
Yeah. A lot of them, I think, is that's the case. It's the concept, don't you think, Matt? It's just like you just that idea. It's just it either makes you just laugh or you go, like I was telling, cause
yeah.
I was telling Ross this earlier, Matt. It makes you laugh, or sometimes you go, "Wow, that would be cool to see it." It has all
yeah.
of those elements. So
yeah, I wound up on one earlier, which was Galactus versus Zap Brannigan from Futurama. Like, you know, that's so weird,
yeah.
but it's so hilarious. I would watch the hell out of that.
I love Zap Brannigan. I've got a few more Futurama covers coming up.
Oh,
I've got one with Ultron versus Bender that I think people are going to really
like. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Matt, you're a big Ultron fan. That's your favorite Marvel
movie. Big Ultron fan, big Futurama fan, so it works for me.
Yeah. I loved stuff like the Cat. One of my favorite ones, I forgot to mention, so sometimes I just run across them and mention them. Captain Marvel and Marvel Man. For those who know anything about comics history, Captain Marvel, you know, the National Fawcett lawsuit that sent him into limbo for 20 years over in Great Britain, you know, Captain Marvel comics were huge and they stopped coming over there, so Great Britain just made their own knockoff character and he was called Marvel Man. To see them on that cover that you did, it's just something really fun about that.
And I kind of refer to that whole thing in the cover. They're both sort of accusing the other one of being a cheap copy. One of them's like, "Hey, I don't need a cheap copy," and the other's like, "Look who's talking," you know, because they're both kind of copies of copies.
Yeah, I love that. Great stuff. Oh, my goodness. That is amazing. And again, the more eclectic, the more off the wall, just the better sometimes. And I'm still, by the way, I've been looking at your blog now for how long ago has it been on, Ross? How long have you had this now?
I think I started April 2010, so I'm just past 4 years.
Okay. Wow, 4 years. Every now and then I will run across one that I haven't seen yet. That's how many there are on this thing for anyone listening out there. By the way, anyone listening out there, it's Ross Pearsall. Pearsall, God, I'm sorry, Ross. I keep forgetting how to pronounce it, please. But it's called Super Team Family, The Lost Issues, the greatest team-ups that never happened but should have. Again, you go to that blog for anyone listening out there on the archives, because we haven't announced it in a while, obviously, since we first started. And to give you an example, Ross, for some reason, I don't know why I've never seen this one. I just randomly, I don't know how I got onto this one, Speed Racer and the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
I love
The way he's coming through the top of that car, you know, that one was just really lucky. Now, fortunately, nobody's like, "Where's the Mach 1? Why is the Speed Racer driving at EW?" But I thought it was a simple cover, but finding a way to squeeze those guys in and look like Speed Racer and his gal were driving in the front seat, I thought that really made that look seamless.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because, again, like you said, when I didn't realize for a second, wait a minute, they're in the taxi cab. He's driving a cab instead of the Mach 5. That's weird. But it's just funny. It's just great.
Yeah, well, you know, they had Mike Zeck illustrated cab driver in there, but I had to get out to make room for Steve.
Oh, man, here's another one I've never seen before, Band of Critters.
Oh, yeah.
I missed some of these.
Yeah, that was one of my first cartoon teams. You know, I like doing the teams. I try to do a team once every month or so, you know. I think it's a nice change from the team-up covers. One of the reasons I started doing teams is so many images of characters are facing straight towards you, running straight towards you. And there's only so much you can do with a pose like that. You can put them side to side, you know, but when I'm doing team-ups and covers, I like characters to interact. So I'm always looking for characters that are looking over their shoulder or behind them or kind of to the side so I can easily make them interact with someone else. So I decided to do the team covers because I have all these images of characters are pretty much straight on that I find hard to use, but in team covers I can kind of have them all standing together and make a team bow. So that's how I started to do a couple team covers, and I liked how they looked, and I liked the concepts. They're always tricky, you know, because instead of three or four images, you know, two characters, a background, and another element, I usually have 10 or 12 in a team cover. They're tougher to do, and also getting all the art to work together. But I get to use those straight on forward images that otherwise would be languishing in my image library. And I think I've come up with some fun concepts for a team to be based around. Some of them are fun concepts, and some of them are, oh, they're all green. You know, pretty simple, but, you know, take what you can get.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I saw a picture not too long ago. I mean, maybe a year or two ago, and I'm not exactly sure. Ross, but I think it was, well, it was, I'm pretty sure it was you and another chap wearing T-shirts with a couple of covers on it. You mentioned that you make a T-shirt. I can't remember the covers now, but is it something you just, you guys were going to a con up north? I don't even know where you're from.
Yeah, that was about a year ago.
Somewhere.
That was me and two of my brothers going to the Boston Comic Con. And, and I made a few T-shirts with covers printed on them. I think I had, I had Burger Masters. I did the Calvin and Hobbes neat Daredevil cover that everybody loved. And I think I had some Justice Society and Avengers covers on one of the other shirts. But they were a big hit. Everybody was asking, oh, where are those from? So they hit at the con.
You were just selling them at the con? Obviously just,
I was just wearing them just to have a shirt to wear at the Comic Con, you know. I didn't, I'm not a cosplay guy, so I thought it would be fun to whip one of those up. No, unfortunately, that's the thing about this blog, the nature of it. It's not a money-making enterprise at all.
No.
In fact, I probably lose money on it when I factor in the hosting fees and the photo booking and all that stuff. But, I mean, it's just the nature of it. I mean, yes, I'm creating new artwork, but I'm using existing artwork by other artists, using characters I don't own. I mean, it's a red tape nightmare. People saw those cover those T-shirts with the covers on them, and a lot of people, hey, where can I get one? I'll play one. Can I tell you my favorite cover? And have one? And I'm like, I wish I could find some way legally to do that, but I just don't think it's possible. It's a red tape nightmare, so... Yeah, unfortunately, even though there's interest there, I can't put out a book or put these on coffee mugs or prints or T-shirts or anything. So basically, it's just a labor of love. And if I can get to 25 cents a day from ad revenue, then, you know, that's my huge profit.
Well, I hear you there. And I can understand that people would see that and go, oh, man, where'd you get that? So cool, that shirt. A buddy of mine, He makes covers, he makes shirts, you know, too, with covers. He has a machine for it, and you know, I'll go, you know, I'll say, man, dude, you don't want to get in no trouble or anything. He said, yeah, but you know, I just make them for my friends and stuff, you know. So
yeah,
he does that
you
sometimes.
Don't sell them,
you know,
fine. And my blog, I think, falls under parody. So you know, I'm fine. You know, I just can't put a book out, you know, with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's made me a couple of covers. He said, pick a cover or something, and a cover. Old classic covers that I love of comics, and I'll be at a con. So where the hell did you get that shirt? And they're like, that's a one of a kind, pal.
Yeah. I hit that cover a few times online at the convention. People really love the Daredevil Calvin and Hobbes one. So I got lots of requests where that came from.
Yep, I hear you there. Now, I mean, by the way, that does kind of lead to another question. I mean, you don't ever have to hear anything from DC or Marvel about it. They don't give you, they don't even talk to you about it or anything like that or anything? Or
nothing directly from them, just from people who've worked for them. And then in those cases, it's always been positive, like Phil Amines. I saw him at the convention, and he was like, oh, your blog is the happiest place on the Internet. And he's been very supportive. So, I've heard from people who've worked for the companies. Nobody in any kind of official capacity as giving me a cease and desist yet. So, and hopefully they wouldn't. Oh. Hopefully they know that I'm doing it out of love for their characters.
Yeah, again, it's good. It's good press for them anyway. And again, I think a lot of, at least those of them who are big comic book fans, you certainly get a kick out of it. So.
And you know, and I try to keep the blog a positive place. I mean, I usually write a little blurb underneath the cover of the day, you know, about something about whoever's featured on that day's cover, and I generally try to keep it positive. There's a million places on the internet that you can go and find out what sucks and what you hate about comics or the latest movie. So I try as much as I can to have my blog to be a showcase about the stuff that's good and that's cool about comics. And, you know, there's plenty of places where you can find out what someone thinks stinks. Hopefully my blog is a place where you can be reminded about something that's cool.
That never happens here, right, Matt?
No, never. Certainly not.
No, we love everything, damn it. We just
absolutely
like to pretend we don't.
It's not to say I try to be a Pollyanna and say everything's wonderful. I just try to emphasize
no,
the things
I hear
that
you.
I like.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, absolutely. Like I say, I do love, you know, reading and engaging in critical thought and analysis and having a good time, you know, if we've been having a, you know, poking fun at things and stuff. But that's not, that's all you do, then it's just a downer constantly and stuff like that. Matt and I will, you know, we'll agree on some stuff, we'll disagree on some stuff, we will criticize things, we'll have fun with stuff, we'll talk about the things we love. It's kind of a mix, just like hanging out at the comic shop talking about, you know, geek stuff and stuff like that. But a lot of times, it's so much fun when we do, for example, have a great guest on like yourself. When we just talk about something like your amazing blog that we just love so much, it is a relief because at Clobbering Time we do get pretty intense on things. Not Matt, of course. He never criticizes anything. Uh-oh.
Never. I love everything. Never. You know that.
You love everything. You big. Yeah. But it sometimes it is fun, Matt. You got to admit when we get away from the clobbering a little bit and just talk about something awesome like this blog.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And, you know, Ross, it is just incredible. Again, I mentioned at the top of the show, Matt, that I saw Ross got a mention in the new issue of, Back Issue Magazine.
Oh, really?
Which I love. Michael Urey, who, again, the great Michael Urey, who runs Back Issue, again, my favorite mag out there, he featured a couple of Ross's covers in there. And that's just... Again, I know you said you were really cool with that at the beginning of the show, Ross. But do you think, I think that in a future issue they should probably do more about team ups that we would like to see, and you know, get you involved with like an article. I mean, about it or something.
Yeah, they did actually something in a previous issue of team ups that you. You would like to see, and somebody, rather than make mashups like I did actual covers and mock-ups, and the guy wrote me when he did it, and he's like, hey, I hope you know that you inspired this page, and so I thought that was kind of cool. But,
nice.
No, it's just great to get a notice like that in the magazine, and it was a nice, you know, I've gotten this podcast request from you, and I did one a week ago, and a few weeks back I got a nice mention on Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman. They do a Hollywood Babylon podcast, and they featured one of my covers on there. I think they do like a viewer mail segment, and somebody had sent in the Cheech and Chong Meet Jay and Silent Bob cover. And so they showed that on their podcast, and they do that in front of a live studio audience, and so it was great. You got a big reaction from the audience, and that was cool. I got a nice big bump after they did that, too. So this month, I've gotten more notice from my blog probably in the last, 3 years combined. So I don't know if I'm just getting a sudden burst of all things together or if this is a sign of big and better things to come. But we'll see. I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
Well, again, it's awesome. And anyone out there who hears about this, I guess anyone listening probably is familiar because Matt could tell you I go on about the blog every now and then on the show. Of course, I guess you'd, and I put it all over my my Clobbering Time group and stuff like that, and they just everyone just loves seeing that stuff. I mean, you could put it on any. I know you have a normal page on Facebook, Ross, but you could put it on any of the other geek type groups on there, and put like one or two or three of your covers on there, and everyone will have something to say about it. Like, oh man, that is so cool. I've had people go, wow, I never saw that issue. When did that happen?
Yeah,
it didn't.
Well, I mean,
that
is one thing, though, that's crazy for me, though. I'll do a cover, I'll put it on my site, and I'll get three or four comments, you know, two from the two guys who comment every day, and then a few more. And then I'll see somebody has put it on Tumblr or Instagram or Pinterest or something like that. Someone has reposted my cover, and then that person will have 40 comments. And I'm like, where are all these people on my blog? the people post on a guy who reposted it, and they don't post on my blog. So sometimes that's a little frustrating. I'm like, if you guys get a comment, make it to me. I need to hear this stuff, good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah, I hear you there. I always try to do that. Like if I put one up there that I see that I think everyone will like, I say, you need to go see this blog. And
yes.
You're like 800-something just in the Super Team family alone. Eight what now? 880-something?
Yeah, and believe me, I'm well ahead. I mean, we're going to be well into the quadruple digits. So.
Wow. That is just incredible. Well, Ross, was there anything we didn't cover that you can think of or anything like that? Because I know I was just going all over the place. We're pretty much stream of unconsciousness here on Clobbering Time. We're just like whatever, you know.
I would say is look into the future. We get some big covers coming up. We'll have in a couple months. We'll have issue number 900. I always like to make the multiples of 100 a big special issue to evoke those old 100-page giants. Now, in the past, for those 100-page giant covers, I've made them look like that with one main story and like maybe three or four little side stories. This one will be the first kind of anniversary issue where it's all like one big story, so it's a fun one. And then after that, it's going to be the countdown to issue 1,000, which I'm hoping to make something really special out of that one. I've been already working on parts of it, and the cover is going to be my biggest cover in size and in complexity and in characters. It's going to be my one of my most difficult covers yet, but I think it's going to look really good, and there's going to be lots of extra features on that one. There's going to be lost issues. I'm going to have the origin of the lost issues. If you ever wondered what the interior pages to lost issues will look like, you'll get an idea of that. There'll be a lot of top 10 lists. People have asked me how to show them how I do a creation of a cover. I did one of those years ago for MS Paint. I'll do another one for Photoshop, take you step by step on exactly how a cover is made. So there's going to be lots of extra things. So the 1,000th issue cover is going to be a real special post. So that's some stuff to look forward to. And in between those anniversary covers, there'll still be a cover every single day. I try to get them up by 8, 9 a.m. Eastern time. So make sure with your breakfast, go on the blog and get your cover for the day.
Well, I'm not gonna be one of those I'm waiting for the trade ones anymore. I'm gonna start looking at. I didn't realize Matt. He told me earlier that Ross said earlier that he does it one every day, 7 days a week, which is just amazing.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
So I did not realize that, but that is fantastic. I look every day now because I have it, you know, I have it bookmarked. Because you have the coolest blog. This is my favorite blog out there, Ross. I love it, man.
Yeah, you can. If you don't want to miss a cover, you know, you can bookmark it. You can follow it on the blog. I have a Facebook fan page, and you can also follow at Ross Pearsall on Twitter, and of course the website is braveandboldlost@blogspot.com. Because, of course, the original name was Brave and the Bold, the Lost Issues.
Yes. So if they go to Blogger, can they just enter Super Team Family, the Lost Issues, and find it, or should they do it the other way?
If you just put in Super Team Family, Lost Issues, believe me, it'll be the first or second thing on Google. It'll come right up.
Yes, exactly. And, again, there's also a Facebook, a little Facebook page you have there. And, Ross, promise me you will come back on again and just talk covers, man, because I really enjoyed this.
Oh, sure. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank you so much. Everyone, Ross, is Pearsall, right? I finally said it right.
Pearsall.
Everyone, I'm a dumb pronouncer of things. I just always have been. But here at Clobbering Time, we love the Super Team Family Lost Issues blog, the greatest team-ups that never happened but should have and really have because they're on these covers, so they have happened to us. So great blog, my friend. I really appreciate it. You've been an extraordinary guest. You really know your stuff, and you do amazing work. So thank you from all the our good friends out there who listen on the archives, the Clobber in Time. And thank you, Ross. I appreciate it so much, sir.
Thank you.
You have a great day, Ross. We will talk to you next time. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one, sir. Well, thank you, everyone. That wraps it up on the archive there for our interview with Ross. I feel bad I kept him on so long because I had him on there for about 2 hours and 25 minutes there, and it just flew by for me, Matt.
Yeah. No, that was great. I was listening a little bit before I came on. Like I said, I was predisposed, and I apologize for being late. That was my fault.
No problem.
And,
No problem.
No, but it was great. That was really cool. He's such a cool guy. I just followed him on Twitter and everything. He's a really cool guy. I love his blog. I just found one that I love that I didn't know about, which was Batman versus Boba Fett. I'm like, that's pretty amazing to think about.
Sometimes I land on one that I either never saw before or just haven't maybe forgot about it because it's been so long.
Yeah.
Because some of them, of course, like the Batman and the Thing. 100-page giant with a, I remember that one somehow. And yet he started out, as you know, the blog used to be, it was Brave and the Bold, and later it was Marvel 2-in-1. But right. This is a Super Team Family he did with those two. And I guess he did a couple of other ones. Maybe the only one he did with them. But, yeah, dude, some of them are just so off the wall and fun. I was telling him, I said, they're like three different types. They're the ones that just are so out there, you go, that's just, it's so crazy. It's funny to laugh at.
Yeah.
It's funny. It makes you laugh with it. And then there are other ones that are like, wow, I never would have thought that was just kind of weird. And then there are ones you're like, you know what? That one could work.
Yeah.
That one you could see. You see what I'm saying? Because, like I say, it's not an insult to any of them. They're all great.
Yeah.
But some of them go, I can see that one. Especially
when
it's two comic book characters. If it's, especially that works better when it's two comic book characters.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's why I loved the Dazzler and Vibe one, because it's like, this is such a bizarre idea, but it would work like gangbusters.
Yep, it would have. And not too many things I would say that about of any comic with Vibe in it. So.
No, that's true.
Vibe. They are perfect together. I remember, is Vibe even still around anymore? I know it's Screw 52, but I mean.
Yeah, well, actually, he's in the Flash show.
What? Vibe is going to be on the Flash?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a recurring guest star. He was in the pilot. Actually, he was in Arrow, too. Yeah.
Vibe?
Yeah.
I must have missed that part. Holy crap. That's weird.
Yeah.
I hope Ross wasn't too put off by it. He said he'd heard the show before. If he told me that beforehand, I'd be like, oh, man. I'd be like, oh, man, you still want to come on? So, Ross or any of Ross's friends who are hearing this, he was just a super great gentleman and a scholar and stuff, and he was nice enough to come on the show even after hearing one, which I thought was very, very nice of him.
You know, when he told me he listened to last week, I'm like, oh, God, I hope he didn't hear my Iron Man 3 review.
Oh, I forgot about that. Did you beat up on Iron Man 3?
A little bit.
We,
I was a little unkind to it.
Yeah, I guess that's right. He didn't note that we're called Clobbering Time for a reason. Well, we are. We have to cop to it. any of our good friends out there who are listening to this, to Matt and I and our mop-up here, who maybe not had listened before, I'm an opinionated bastard. I love comic books. It's all coming from love. Okay, it's coming from hate, too, when it's something I don't love. But, I mean, the thing that, for those of you who do not know, and I guess I should explain it, it's, whether we agree on things or not, I'd love to have anyone on here that disagrees. My friend Matthew here, and his pappy Flash, who of course is going to be brought to the Clobbering Time, would shed soon for transgressions of making fun of the Atom and Ant-Man. Yeah, we have a Clobbering Time woodshed, for those who don't know. But for the new listeners out there who are listening, for Ross, Matt and I disagree on all kinds of stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. There's so many things. We're just from two different generations. We could not disagree more on some things, and yet we're friends and we have fun with it. And I just believe opinions can be fun, and you can't take it too seriously, though sometimes – Matt will tell you, as hard as it is to believe, I get a little bit worked up. Okay, it's not hard to believe. Not hard to believe at all, if you know me. But, yeah, I mean, we can get out there a little bit. Again, and it's usually me. Matt's usually pretty well behaved, but I will go off on things from time to time. Obviously last week.
I've never heard you rant and rave about the Fantastic Four movie, the reboot Fantastic Four, or Man of, what's your new name for it? Man of Steel?
Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah, Man of Steel.
or the Screw 52. Never.
No.
It's always very kind and wonderful and lovely.
Yeah. No, look, here's something I believe in. Again, Matt, it's kind of like we were speaking to people who may not have heard before that were listening for Ross, and if they're still listening on the archive, I do appreciate it. And so I'm trying to give them a little bit of a the things Matt just mentioned, I go off on it. I'm very passionate about it. I'm very emotional about it. The things I love, something I love is being trashed. And when you get old, you kind of just start feeling that way about a lot of stuff, I guess. At least I know I do. Not everyone, but I do. I do that stuff, but you know what? You know, again, Matt doesn't agree on a lot of those things, and he comes on. We're friends, and we get along and have a great time. Matt is just an extraordinary gentleman, and we have so much fun talking about the stuff, whether we're beating up on it or agreeing on it or disagreeing on it. To me, it's just so much fun. And the thing is, that's what Clobbering Time is about. It's about having fun talking about the things we're passionate about. But, you know, Ross is right. He keeps it very positive on his blog, which is good, which he should do. And if I had the capability of doing that, Matt, I would. But we do know, let's face it, podcasts are a little bit different. You're supposed to be able to come out, you know, talk about, you know, honestly about your opinions and your feelings and thoughts on things. And your opinions and your feelings and thoughts on things aren't always going to be, they're not always going to be very comfy and cozy. Sometimes you're going to be pissed off about things. If you're a geek, I don't judge you if you disagree with me on something geek-wise. The only time I'll ever be questionable about you is if you have no passion or emotion ever. If you like every single thing that comes down the pike, I still like you as a person. I don't get you. If you don't want to go off on something sometimes, I don't get you. You see, you know where I'm coming from with that, Matt?
Yeah.
It could be something I love and think is the coolest thing ever, and if Matt goes off on it and he can't stand it, I get a chuckle out of it. I think it's funny. You know, Matt, because there's some stuff I love you can't stand. And you know, not just you. Melinda does it, too. I just think it's funny. Maybe I'm weird that way, huh?
It's happening more and more now with, you know, because like you were saying earlier, we're both from this very different geek generation. So now it's happening more and more now with the Turtles and the Transformers, who they were my thing, you know. They were that era, they were that generation. The Turtles and the Transformers are my thing, and that whole era. So now the pendulum is starting to swing back to me and bite me in the ass. Now it's happening to me where I have to go off on the Transformers and Turtles movies.
I think that's kind of goes with the territory of being a geek, whatever age you are. In 20 years, there's going to be, there might be someone who loves some of the things going on now that pisses me off, that's going to go, oh, my God, look what they've done to sell us. I'll give you sort of an example, Matthew. It was a lovely young lady, Kristen, who was I was talking to about, I had on a month or two ago, talking about Buffy and different things like that. Well, she's a big Harry Potter fan. Mm-hmm. And we got on the subject of remakes, stuff like that. And you know, you know, we were talking about, you know, I guess I made a comment. You know how you really love something and you can't see, you don't like to see it messed up? I said, imagine someone doing that to Harry Potter. Something along those lines. And she rightly said, well, right now, J.K. Rowling has complete control over that, mm-hmm. so no one can touch it but her. And I was thinking, you know how lucky you must be if Harry Potter is your thing, and she's a huge fan, that's her favorite thing. She loves other stuff too, but how lucky are you if that's your favorite thing, and it's true.
Oh, yeah.
That writer, this particular writer has completely good, no one could ever do anything, maybe after she's gone, maybe, but no one could ever do anything to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's 7 books, it's 7 movies, and I guess if it happens, it's got to be with her go-ahead, because she owns it, right?
Right.
Well, there's almost no other, I can't name you too many other things connected to geek stuff, comics, movies, whatever, where the original creator is alive and well and owns it lock, stock, and barrel. Can you?
The only one I could think of, and I don't even know if this is true or not, is maybe Kirkman with Walking Dead, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's one thing he has complete control over. So if you're a Walking Dead freak, whether it's for the TV show or the comic book or whatever, nothing, you know, get in. So if you ever get pissed at it, you have one guy to get pissed off at, and it's the creator of the thing. But you can't say that about Superman or the Fantastic Four or Batman or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of, and it's kind of a weird thing when you take a character. Again, I just used Kristen's example because Harry Potter is the only one I can think of right now that has a huge, not only generational following, but a big geek following that is, again, if anything happens bad to Harry, you know, it's all going to be, if you don't like something happens to Harry, it's going to be, you know, all on JK.
Yeah.
Whereas other people now have their hands on characters created by, because again, most of these creators are gone. If they're classic comic book characters, as you know, almost all of the creators of the classic characters are gone. Almost all of them. Who's alive now? Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe another creator of a classic comic book character that's alive. I don't think I can name you one.
Ditko?
Ditko, there you go. And he has no say in what happens to Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Or Doctor Strange. And Stan Lee, to be honest with the figurehead though he is, really has no say that happens to any of his characters that he's co-created. So there's me being fair to Stan Lee. You don't hear that every day on the show. but, you know, again, he's a co-creator. So, and I guess, I'm trying to think of it. There are probably some, like, people who are fans of certain novel series or whatever that might still be alive. I don't know. But for the most part, these, you know, someday, if you're reading something right now that you really like, 20 years from now, if you remain a geek and you don't grow up like I didn't, you look back and you go, oh, my God, these people who don't have any history with it like I do, who haven't loved it as long as I do, have now got their paws on it, and they're basically, and they really do, they'll say in interviews sometimes, like, well, if you don't like it, screw you, you're too old anyway, who cares? And when you start to hear that kind of stuff, and we've all been young and have said that kind of stuff to older people, but when you get to the other side of it, you're like, You really want to understand it. You go, look, okay, I get it. I'm too old to be loving this stuff anyway. I shouldn't be complaining about what happens to it, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe you're right. Maybe I have no cause to bitch about it, and I should understand that these things are going to change because life is about change. I understand all that. But we're talking about geek stuff here. We're talking about something that exists within the realm of our own imaginations and our own hearts. If you're a geek, it's about your heart as much as it is about your mind. It's your heart, it's your imagination. So you can try to logic it to death all you want, and there's I know some people who will say, look, I'm very good, one good buddy of mine who's around my age who just puts up with any update, remake thing ever, and he said, I'm totally zen about it. I realize they're just going to do all this stuff, and I'm fine with it, whatever they do. I'm like, I don't understand how you could lax your standards that way, but if you have that superpower, I wish I could get there. I could be the same way, like, yeah, you know, who cares what they do to Superman? Who cares what they do to them? I'll just go with it. And again, he's not even – I can see if someone's saying, look, it doesn't bother me. I'm just not going to read it anymore. I'm just not going to watch it. But he actually, you know, he watches that stuff, and we're just two different personality types, I guess. Because I'm like, dude, I don't like, you know, he'll put up with him. And by the way, you get him in a conversation, he'll know everything you say. He's like, look, yeah, I'm not saying I wish that, I prefer them doing that to him, but, you know, I'm just going to go with it. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I have that capability. And I don't know if you do, Matt, you might not. I don't have that. You
to
see where
point.
I'm coming from on that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you definitely have it way more than I do, but I'm saying at some point you're going to get aggravated with it.
Yeah,
not always.
There's certain boundaries, there's certain thresholds and breaking points to where I do break. But otherwise, yeah, I'm pretty. What was he say? What did he say? I love that. I'm pretty zen about it overall. Yeah.
He says he's kind of zen about it, and
yeah.
You know the old Michael Lanza. I was like, I wanted to strangle him when he said it, but I didn't. So I'm growing as a person. 10 years ago, a man committed violence. Kidding, by the way. Just kidding. He's a good buddy. But yeah, I.
He was.
In other words. Yes, he was. He's dead now. I killed him. Now, there's the thing. There's the thing, Matthew. I don't think I could be zen about it. I'm trying.
Yeah.
By the way, I really am trying. There's certain things I'm not going to zen about. Because you know what? When you lax your standards.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I think to me it almost kind of comes down to how attached personally you are to that character, like Superman or Batman or whoever. You all have sort of different attachments to things and. So depending on how deep the attachment runs, it might change how much you're willing to let it stress.
Well, you're right. And the thing is, you know what? I don't want to be zen about it, but I am practical about it in the sense that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because you've certainly heard me say it a billion times, like a broken record, these things are not aimed at me. These things are going to happen whether I like them or not, so there's not much point in getting a lot of blood pressure blowing up over it. But they're going to happen whether I like it or not. And that's a fact. So in that respect, I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say that's necessarily being zen about it, but it is being practical about it. They're not, calling me on the phone and saying, "Look, guy, you mind if we make a found footage movie of the Fantastic Four and we screw around with the cat and we make this kind? Look at these casting shape. What do you think of this casting thing? Oh, and what if we base it on Ultimates? And what if it's really not too much like the Fantastic Four in the comic at all? We're going to call it that anyway. What do you think? You're not going to really get all worked up about that, right? You're cool with it, huh? What the hell? I mean, you don't need my $10. You know, go for it. You'll probably get, they don't care. In fact, it's the opposite. They're not even like, look, I understand where you guys are coming from if you don't like this kind of stuff, but you're really, they're not even being cool about it. They're not going, look, this is not for you 50-year-old fucks. You 50-year-olds, you don't need to be going to see a Fantastic Four movie. You don't need to be going to see a movie where a guy's supposed to be Superman, even though we won't say the name. You don't need to be going to see a Star Trek movie or whatever. You're too old for it. Why don't you grow up and go to the old folks' home? You're 50, but that's old and that's 100 and geek years. We don't care about you. So, that's basically what they're saying. They're like, if you don't like it, suck it, is what they're saying. So it's kind of tough not to have a human reaction to that.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have knee-jerk reactions to things. Like we go, yeah, well, if they're going to come out and say it's not your father's Star Trek, as J.R. Abrams did, you know what? Screw him. And then who's the bad guy? Well, you shouldn't be bitching about that stuff. What's wrong with you? I don't know. I guess you're right. I mean, maybe they're right. Look, why bitch about it? Except I think I know why, Matt, because it's kind of fun just to vent about things. Isn't that kind of
human
too?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, didn't you have a little fun picking on Iron Man 3 last week?
It was, it was a great release because, it's one thing, because it's like you watch the movie and any movie, it doesn't have to be Iron Man 3, you watch, but in the case of Iron Man 3, I watch Iron Man 3 and I'm like, Jesus, God, piece of shit. And I'm thinking this to myself, but I'm not actually saying it out loud. I'm like, fuck, bad. And then I go on Facebook and I talk about it, but it's not the same as, having a platform to talk about it and rage on it and... people get mad about, complaining on the internet and stuff, and they get pissed, and they're like, don't do that, and, you're making me, you're upsetting me, basically, is what they say. It's like, it's fun. You should actually try it sometime. I mean, obviously, don't complain about everything, but don't pretend everything is A-plus awesome, just so you don't have to complain.
Well, they're humans, and they do it, too. There's the thing. A lot of the people who can squawk about it and say, you don't have to – they do it, too. If it's something – see, they'll be, you guys just bitch about too much stuff. When it's something they like, they don't want to hear the bitching. If they happen to dislike it, then it's okay. And that's kind of – again, I understand that's kind of human nature, but I'm telling you, that does kind of happen sometimes. They'll be like, if they hated the movie, they're going to want, and they know someone's dogging it out, they want to get in on the dogging it out fest. If they liked it, you guys get a bunch of, you know, and I guess I see that in a way. I guess I've just gotten so weird now. If I really like a movie and one of my friends is going off all on it, like you or Melinda or whoever, I'm going to go, wow, you didn't like that? Well, I kind of thought it was pretty cool. You didn't like, and then I'm just going to kind of get a kick out of it. Maybe I'm zen about that. But if it's a total, even if it's a total stranger, if they're saying it's crap, I think I've gotten to the point where I'm like, well, okay, I guess I did. Maybe it's crap. I kind of liked it, but that's cool, whatever. And you've been always been a really good sport about that kind of stuff too, more than most people, I think. Because I mean, maybe you really are getting mad later. I don't know. But oh, you there? Oh, I lost you. Anyway, everyone, I think I lost Matthew there. Oh well, I'm going to close it up now. But everyone, we just got a little bit of after discussion there because we like to talk about stuff because we're geeks. That's what we do. But I lost Matthew on the recording there. I want to thank everyone. I want to thank Ross Pearsall. Oh, Pearsall. I'm so sorry, Ross. I always mess up. I don't know what it is with me and pronunciations tonight. Long day at work. But thank you all. Thank everyone for being here on the podcast archive feed. And I hope we have Ross on again, back again someday. I'm going to see Guardians of the Galaxy this week. And next week we're going to talk about that and Comic-Con with a friend of mine who attended it. Thank you so much. Later, friends.